Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
You know, it's funny. I'm still geared towards the 7 o'clock time here. Now, I know it's 7 o'clock on the East Coast, but it's still 6 o'clock in the morning here, Central Time. And so it's fascinating, you know, as we go along to try and get this, you know, the third hour going here, and actually it's now the first hour, but it's weird how your body rhythms and everything else. And I look at the clock and go, it's only, you know, 5:45. I got another hour. It's like, oh, no, no. So here we are. Anyway, so Greg Penglis here, coming to you from Milton, Florida, and broadcasting worldwide, which is amazingly cool, except for China. We're not quite sure what happened to China. China dropped off the map here. I have this international map that Blog Talk Radio gives me. And so China kind of dropped off a few months ago now, and they took Taiwan with them. So whatever's happening in China and Taiwan, they don't want, China doesn't want anybody listening to Action Radio, which I find quite fascinating because that many people, you know, think not one of them is listening. In fact, we even had a call from Beijing early on. So China must have done something. But we had a college student, Chinese, a student who was here in the United States who had gone through the, you know, our education program, went back, took all our wonderful knowledge back to China to do whatever he was supposed to do for the Communist Party. And we never heard from him again. So I'm wondering, you know, I hope he's still okay. I don't know, because China's a totalitarian dictatorship, much like the one Biden wants to form here. And so it's very, you know, you kind of speculate and you wonder, because you never know quite how far your voice goes. But I know we're listened to in Afghanistan. I know we still have listeners in Iran, and some of the hotspots in the world are still listening to us. It's quite fascinating. Myanmar, Bangladesh, you know, these just amazing places I never thought I'd be able to reach. But you know, good chunk of South America. Not as much of Africa as I would like. Russia listens to, I wonder if Putin listens. I wonder if Putin gets his daily dose of Action Radio. Hey, good morning, Vladimir. What do you think is Action Radio? People are writing their own bills. They think they can be government when you are government. We know how this works, right? You wonder what conversations are going on in the Kremlin, right? So, I mean, they're not bothering with us yet, but they will. They will, because this could very easily become a worldwide movement. I know Europe's going to love what we do here. Australia, you know, we got to save Australia. Australia was a country. I was talking to friends of mine this weekend. Australia, I mean, I spent 4 years there in my childhood. I love Australia. I had such a blast there. But it's not Australia that it was. It's not the Australia that it was when I was there. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, when I was there, we were all competitive. We did sports. Even though I sucked at sports, I still did it because we're competitive, right? It didn't matter. You got to try. And the attitude of Australians when I was there has always been try. Try your best. Yeah, so you flub up, so you fail, so you lose. I mean, losing's nowhere near as big a deal as it is here. Here, losing, I mean, you're worthless. You know what I mean? And that's why I never played school sports in the United States. I don't like the attitude. You know, it's not that I mean, I could sort of, but actually it's kind of funny. I had to teach American kids how to, back when I was, you know, a Canadian by Australia, I taught American kids how to kick a football because they didn't know. They were punting. I said, that doesn't work. Try this. Try a spiral kick. I was like, well, what's that? Well, we knew about that in Australia. Anyway, I'm digressing horribly. But point being that this will catch on. And the idea, because, I mean, freedom is the natural state of people. I mean, it just is. And so, but people don't have the access or technology or I guess, idea. I mean, freedom's been bred out of so many people. I mean, it's being bred out of all the folks in our school system. In fact, I was talking to somebody, a friend this weekend also. I talked to a lot of people, and I don't tell you who they are for obvious reasons. Anyway, so I'm talking to a friend of mine about education. And there's an interesting article, we'll see if we get to it today, talking about how one of these national education board people or organizations is saying that, you know, you have to stop parents from speaking at school board meetings. I mean, they're domestic terrorists. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to direct their kids' education. They can't do that. That's our job. They're trying to, you know, have control over their kids and responsibility for their kids. And that's our job, you know. And I'll get to it. I've got the letter. I've got, anyway, but the reaction was fascinating. And it's just the way this is going. And so I told my friend that, you know, and she probably forgot this, but earlier on this, because it was probably from March to maybe June, July, August. It was probably June or July, somewhere in there. Anyway, the in March 2020 to July 2020, when the school was closed, right? Because this is one of the first things that happens: the school is closed. Oh no, COVID! Let's get rid of all the people who are immune. You know, let's quarantine the healthy. You know, let's mandate masks so kids get sicker. You know, I mean, I say that sarcastically, but that's exactly what happened. All right. Anyway, so my recommendation at the time was that all the government schools be closed. I mean, if they're closed now, close them permanently. Get rid of them. Sell their buildings. You know, another privatize all the buildings. Sell them to private entrepreneurs to set up private schools. All right. And this could have been done nationally. It could be done it would never have been done at the national level because most of the good things start at the states or the counties. But it could have been done at the state level or even the county level. Counties could have said, that's it. Okay, no more government schools. We're not collecting the taxes. You know, we're not taking the taxes. You know, we're going to privatize. And you schools, you know, we'll go to a full voucher program. And parents will get all the education taxes. And they'll get a voucher and they can send their kids wherever they want. So whether you're lower income or higher income, you know, you're paying taxes, you got school kids, you know, you get the deal. I'm not a great fan of education taxes anyway, simply because people who don't have kids are still paying, you know, for other parents to have their kids educated. And but people say, but Greg, I'll channel Rush Limbaugh, who nobody seems to talk about anymore. You know how quickly he disappeared? Yeah, I think that's by design too. So Rush Limbaugh, you know, would have said, but Rush. So I say, but Greg, you know, an educated population is better for society. And I'm thinking, oh really? And you think the government schools are going to do that? Are you insane? So an educated populace is far better for society, obviously, but the government is in no position to do that, none whatsoever. That's why I find this also fascinating. All right, so let me get, I got a couple more news items here I might touch on, as they say, as we go through the morning. First of all, my band Starfish, we had our first gig in Milton Saturday night, and it was interesting. We, you know, it was our first. We it was a little rough around the edges, but we learned a tremendous amount. And unfortunately, we got rained out the third set. So we got two sets in. We were going to play a third set and weren't quite able to do that. It was rain, and we had to get our equipment under the tent and all kinds of other stuff. So anyway, we'll be back. We're gonna take a little time off and get better, stronger, change some of our songs, and come back even better. So we will be the premier rock dance band, you know, of the Gulf Coast between Gulf Shores, Alabama, and Fort Walton Beach, Florida. That's our goal here. Anyway. So, yeah, I'll be rocking out soon. So that's my outlet. I don't talk politics there. We just play rock and roll. it's just music, all right? And if you do politics all the time, as I do, you have to have an outlet. So all you folks that if politics is all you do, seriously, do something else. You know, get a sport, get an activity, get something that floats your boat, as they say. And you will be much, much happier. That way you can engage in this stuff, you know, part of the time, and it's okay. All right, so that's news. I was reading that some 60 military jets flew into Taiwan airspace over the last week or so. And unfortunately, Claire Lopez is not going to be with us Thursday. So I'm going to ask Dr. Pry, Peter Pry, about that when he comes on at 8 o'clock. So we've got a couple, almost 2 hours before Peter gets here. But that's going to be something quite interesting. Of course, Dr. Pry's specialty is nuclear weapons, national security, national defense. That's what he does. And so it'll be interesting to see what he has to say about that. I was starting to read some news articles, but I checked out a few right before the show. I mean, literally right before the show, like 5 minutes beforehand, I'm reading along. I'm thinking, huh, isn't my show supposed to start soon? I look around, it's like 5 minutes. The show time. I was like, okay, fine. So, you know, click on the thing, activate the screen, and away we go. But it's interesting watching this and watching the lack of reaction. Apparently there's some news story about the Biden insurrection does have some kind of reaction to this. And away they go. That's nowhere near, though, as interesting as what happened, what I found out about just before the show. And that's the title of the show here. So the title of the show today, Obama speaks against his own open border policy to usher new policies. And you're wondering, Greg, what the hell are you talking about? Well, I'll explain it in just a second. But first, let me wake you up with this. We'll be right back.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
Yeah, so something happened. I guess it was just a few days ago. I only heard about it. This weekend was kind of crazy. I was playing rock and roll and I had the day job yesterday. So I was sort of most of my weekend was kind of taken up with other stuff. So I'm playing a little bit of catch up this morning. But if you know me, you know the show. I'm several days ahead. So it's just a matter of, it's more deciding what stories to talk about, not going, what am I going to talk about? Digging for things. I have way more than I could possibly talk about. All right. So as legend has it, there was an interview with Barack Obama, who is currently acting president, with Biden as a mouthpiece, sitting there, and he said something really incredible. Let me see if I can get you one of the articles here. And this is from Independent Journal Review, and I believe I'm not sure where they're located. Anyway, the author Bradley Courtright. Hey, Bradley. Well, it's so nice to have you. It's probably one of these prep school people. Bradley Courtright. Oh, you notice no prep schools had mask mandates or vaccine mandates? Have you noticed that? Do you know any private schools that have a mask or vaccine mandate? No, it's only the government schools. Right? So the government wants to control you, right? And so, but the private schools don't do that. The other thing I noticed is fascinating is not a single politician has come down with a vaccine injury. Statistically, that's impossible. You look at all the politicians, on the federal, state, and local level. And, you only hear about the local politicians at your local level. But I don't know a single politician that's come down with a vaccine injury. That, to me, is staggering, which means one of two things. A, they're not telling us. B, they never got the vaccine. I think the answer is B. So you can think for yourself. Search. I mean, if anybody wants to search, I haven't done a news search on this, but if anybody wants to search the news, go ahead. Find me a politician. Find me an office holder. Find me a health bureaucrat. Dr. Fascist or any of his underlings. Any of his minions. Find me any person in government, a major position in government. And let's look through the cabinet. Let's look through the Joint Chiefs of Staff. General Mark Milquetoast, and the Affirmative Action Secretary of State, Defense. Excuse me, what's his name? Albright? No, that's the other one. That was someone. I forgot his name. That's how important he is, right? Okay, so I remember Milquetoast. And I guess this other guy, some other General McKenzie, I'm not sure what he does. All I know is that all Canadians are named McKenzie, so he must have a Canadian background. That's just how it works. So I'm just watching all these crazy things, and I'm thinking to myself, how come none of these folks have been affected? It's a good thing we haven't lost celebrities, but I'm just saying that not a lot of celebrities have been affected by this either, which means they're not taking it and saying they are. Or they're getting problems and not saying anything. The most notable person I know that's really objecting to the entire messenger RNA, let's give you COVID through the vaccine shot, is Eric Clapton. One of my personal heroes being a guitar player. It's really great that, they call him Slow Hand because he's not the fastest player in the world. And Eric Clapton kind of saved my guitar playing because I want to be one of these speed guys, right? And I'm trying to play faster and faster. And I got these big lumberjack hands. I can't play fast. I just can't. So I thought, I better do something else. So then I hear Eric Clapton going, damn, that's good. they call him Slow Hand. He's not playing fast. This is okay, there's hope for me yet. So I developed some new tones, some new ways of playing, and just you be an innovator, and that's what you do as a musician. So if everybody else is playing fast, play slow. Sound different. It'll be great for your playing. Anyway, I digress. But the thing is, Clapton will not play a concert where they require vaccinations, which are not vaccinations anyway, but he won't do it. He had such a bad reaction. He had a bad reaction to the first one. He had a terrible reaction to the second one. Okay. So why he even did it at all, obviously he doesn't. Eric, listen to Action Radio. In fact, come on the show. Let's talk guitar. Wouldn't it be fun? Someday. Someday we'll have, millions of listeners. I'll be able to do that. But anyway, it's just fascinating to me. I always look to the things that are not being reported because, what is reported is only half the news. The other half is what's not being reported. And what's not being reported is the fact that no major politician, office holder, bureaucrat, or anybody in government that I know of some of the here on the news has reported a vaccine injury or even death in the family or anything. It's just they know. I think they're all on hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. I think they're all in these, I know Dr. Fascist is. I don't know, but I know. Okay. I mean, he's never going to admit it. But I guarantee you that the reason they banned hydroxychloroquine is because Dr. Fascist knows that it works and because they want to have it out. The one thing about dictators and tyrants is they're all just cowards at heart. You get right down to it, they're cowards. They would never do, a brave thing in their life. They hide behind their power and they're pretty willing to kill other people because they're, psychopaths. But they will never hurt themselves, intentionally. And so that's why Dr. Fascist, I'm sure it takes hydroxychloroquine every day. I'd love to blood test him. Just to find out for sure. But these folks created the vaccine, then they created the virus, And they would never create a virus they didn't have a cure to. So they created a virus with a known cure to them. Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, zinc, vitamin D3, vitamin C, you know, azithromycin for pneumonia. I mean, obviously they know that. You know, I believe they do. Otherwise they wouldn't have done it. That's why they created this thing. All right, anyway, if anybody wants to call in, we've got a couple hours here. This is more of our chat time. So this is, you know, Monday morning. Let's get the week started. We've got a lot of things to talk about. And so if you want to just – these are open lines. My 6 o'clock hour has not filled up. It will, I'm sure, with more reporters as we go. But I always want to leave time for us just to chat. So this is a good time for us to chat. 215-383-3832. You don't have to cover my topics. It's nice if you do, but you don't have to. And so if you want to cover something else, you know, totally off the wall, feel free. Live chat is working. I don't have Gene right now this morning, so I'm going to have to check this myself periodically. And so live chat, if you want to engage in live chat, what you do is you go to your regular page your broadcast page, and you look at your broadcast page and you say, aha, you know, oh, here's live chat. So I'm going to type a little thing here. Just excuse me. I'm going to type, you know, ready for messages. So I have to reach around my microphone and actually type this myself. So hang on. I'll just kind of talk out here for a bit. And let me see. So ready for messages. Okay. Yeah. So if you want to call in, if you want to use live chat, feel free. And I will check into that periodically and see what's going on. All right. So let's run this. Let me check my notes here for myself. Yeah, this is all right. So let me give you the quote, and let me give you my theory. And I'm very curious to see what y'all think of this. So apparently, you know, current president, you know, acting president, let's start calling it. So acting president Obama, what that means. Acting president Obama, thief in chief Biden. I mean, everybody has to have a title, okay? Dr. Fascist, you know, so I learned that from Donald Trump, is if you name people, you know, little rocket man, you know, you know, Sleepy Joe. Trump is famous for this. I miss some of the characters that he had. So I've got Thief in Chief Biden and Acting President Obama. So we know that Biden, you know, you can tell him anything. So here's what the left has created. They've created a person that is occupying the White House. People are almost being told to call him president. I won't. I don't care what you do. You know, he's not president. He's under an ongoing investigation. He's under audit. Okay. So Joe Biden, thief in chief, is under audit, and as such should not be allowed to make any policies or sign any executive orders until the audit's complete. I mean, that's what you do in this ongoing investigation, right? So there he is, but he's the perfect foil because he doesn't know what he's saying. So he's incredibly useful to, you know, acting President Obama, because acting President Obama could do any policy he wants, however horrendous, and guess who's going to get the blame? Joe Biden. You know, people don't hate Obama for open borders. You know, they hate Joe Biden. People don't hate Obama for restricted energy. Or for bringing in Muslims to repopulate the United States, or, you know, goat herders and Somalis and Somali warlords and people like that, and whoever else showed up here, you know, under Obama's alleged, you know, administration. Still not sure where he's from. But all these things, you know, Biden's perfect because he'll get the blame for anything that Obama screws up. Okay. And here's where it gets really fascinating, because Obama is in the unique position of not only being acting president at this time with Susan Rice and Valerie Jarrett and who knows who else of you know, the ladies in waiting, you know, to the leftist power, but he can change policy by simply blaming Biden for his own mistakes. I mean, this is an incredibly powerful and unique position. And I don't, you know, it's fascinating when you watch the news. And there's a little clip, there's a videotape I found on Fox News when they listened to this tape of what Obama actually said. And I'll tell you what he said in a minute. But they were going, oh, wow, isn't that fascinating? Look what he said. Obama said that. Isn't that amazing? And then they move on because, you know, they figure the attention span of America is like, you know, 5 seconds. You know, and after 5 seconds, you move on. And maybe it is true. Maybe you've already left my show. I don't know. I mean, call me. Feel free. 215-383-3832. But what's fascinating to me is that, you know, where they leave off where we start. Because anybody that knows me knows that the story isn't complete until we've hashed it out. And I mean, seriously, hash it out. And so to me, it's fascinating. I mean, I always look for motivations. What would motivate Obama to – well, here's what he actually said. So it was on ABC News Nightline, okay? Now, Obama hasn't said a word. He didn't say anything after Afghanistan, hardly. I mean, he made a comment somewhere. He didn't make a video. What would bring Obama out of hiding, out of being, you know, secret acting president, to actually being openly critical of the thief in chief that he put there, you know, with the Democrats when they stole the election? Right. Well, the only thing was he needs to change his own bad policies, but he needs to. But Biden not only has the blame, but Biden's going to have to do it, you know, by following the orders that Obama gives him. But the thing is, Obama's not accountable either way. So whether the policies are a success or a failure, not Obama's not responsible. So this gives him the chance to do all the things he wanted to do during his two terms in office, but couldn't because he'd actually be held accountable. Now that he's not being held accountable, he gets to be acting president, and he can make all the mistakes he wants. He can try to do everything he wants, but he still doesn't want to damage the party, damage his reputation. He still wants Democrats to be in power in 2022. And they're probably thinking there's not enough vote fraud in the world to get them to do that. So he's got to start taking some corrective action. So now we're entering this weird phase now as we approach the 1 year, start of election season. So Congress, you know, they act for 1 year and then they campaign for 1 year. That's the way it seems to be going. So Obama in his calculations is thinking to himself, huh, okay. Biden sucks as a thief in chief. All right. His policies, he tried his best. He figured America would, you know, by owning the news media as the Democrats do, and except for like One American News. I think it's the only one. I don't even watch Newsmax anymore because they're still fluffy. And Fox News, God, they might as well be, you know, MSNBC. You know, so, you know, the Fox, CNN, MSNBC, you know, leftist industrial media complex. Right. So that's kind of what it is. Did anybody see their puff piece last night? I watched part of it. It was hysterical. You know, they had the 25th anniversary at Fox News. This is why we're great. This is why you should watch us. This is what we used to do really well. You know, and then, of course, the current Fox is a total joke. But they used to do some really good things. I mean, they really did. We all watched Fox News up until 2016 when they announced that Arizona was called for thief and Biden, you know, long before. And, of course, Arizona's still in an audit. So obviously that was a bad call. So Obama is in this incredible position. Right? I don't know any time this has ever happened in history. Of course, it may have. We didn't know it. But has anybody been this powerful and this unaccountable in American history? Probably some of the robber barons, maybe. But of course, everybody knew who they were too. So Obama, nobody grills him. I mean, you see the piece on the videotape, and you don't even see the questioner asking a question. There's certainly no follow-up questions. But here's what he said. He said, this is ABC News Nightline. This is like 4 days ago. He says, immigration is tough. It always has been. Wait, if I just read that to you, would you associate that with Obama? Would you immediately go, that sounds like Barack Obama. Yeah, yeah. He says, immigration is tough. It always has been. Because on the one hand, I think we're naturally a people that wants to help others, and there's your leftism, even though it's not true. And then he says, at the same time, we're a nation state. Oh, really? when did that nation state enter your vocabulary? And actually, that's almost like leftist code, because conservatives, independents, patriots, you know, constitutionalists, we don't say we're a nation state. We say we're a nation, okay? That's like when Biden says Taliban. They say Taliban the way Obama says Taliban, the way he says Pakistan. You know, Pakistan. I mean, nobody talks like that except Obama, right? Because Obama went to, you know, Pakistan, you know, when nobody else could. And we're still wondering how he was able to get away with that. But as soon as, you know, Biden, I'd love to get an old tape of Biden saying, Taliban. We hate the Taliban. And then as soon as he becomes thief in chief, he says Taliban because Obama is speaking through his head, Taliban. It's fascinating the way this works. I mean, these are things you want to look for. Look for the subtle clues. Look for the lies. Look for the, you know, and I talk about it too. I got an article online. It's great. You know, body language. As soon as I'm watching this interview with Biden, you know, and it's only a couple of minutes long, but it's fascinating how much body language there is. Okay. So look at the video. I've got on my Facebook page for my friends, but you guys can look it up. Just go to YouTube, or even Rumble. I got a Rumble one too, and watch Obama when he talks about, you know, immigration is hard and we're a nation state. I mean, he's blinking like crazy. All right. His hand movements are a little awkward. I mean, he's left-handed, so when he makes hand gestures with his right hand, apparently that's a giveaway too. So he's doing all this body language that's screaming out, I'm lying, I'm lying, I'm lying, I don't believe this, I'm lying, I'm lying, I have to say this, I'm lying, I'm lying, I'm lying, 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 liar, liar, pants on fire. But he has to say that because he's got to change the policy, all right? So this is what it is. So his open border policy sucks. It doesn't work. He's gotten in just a ridiculous amount of people, but all the news ownership in the world can't make this look good. Okay. You know, Obama knows that. So he's smart. I mean, don't ever discount Obama when it comes to brains. You know, he's an avowed Muslim Marxist totalitarian. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I have any respect for the guy. But the only thing I acknowledge is that he's really smart. Okay. You know, you don't get to be picked by the global cabal to be president of the United States without being really smart. And so he's like in that respect, too. They're both political animals and they're smart enough to know when to pull back. I mean, Bill Clinton was smart enough to know when to pull back from welfare and national health care and some of the other things he wanted to do that Hillary was pushing him to do. Hillary's not a political animal. Hillary's just an operative. You know, she's as psychopathic as Dr. Fascist. And so she doesn't give a damn about this country. You know, she wants power. I mean, they say the love of money is the root of all evil. No. The root of the love of power. The love of power is the root of all evil. Trust me on that. All right. So continuing our story. I'm speaking extemporaneously. I have like three notes. You know, just some rambling from here. All right. So let me get back to the quote. Immigration is tough. It always has been. Because on the one hand, I think we are naturally a people that wants to help others. At the same time, we're a nation state. We have borders. The idea that we can just have open borders is something that I think, as a practical matter, unsustainable. Okay, this is full of buzzwords. Unsustainable, that's like environmental 101, all right? You know, I think sustainable or not. In other words, can you keep it going? Is the harvesting of paper for the New York Times every Sunday, is that sustainable? Well, no, because it takes acres of trees, you know, make one edition of the Sunday New York Times in a newspaper. Well, probably not now because, you know, nobody's reading it. But, you know, time was when people read Sunday papers, the amount of trees used in a Sunday paper is huge. So one of the greatest benefits of the internet, people tend to forget, is our use of paper has dropped drastically. That may be why timber is so expensive, because we're not using paper for newspaper in the amount that we did. I mean, I don't. When I lived in San Francisco in the 80s, you know, I always got the Sunday paper, especially the pink section, because that all the entertainment stuff and the movies. You had the movie reviews, right? So you have these movie reviews, and he had this little guy. He'd be asleep in his chair for a bad movie. He'd be standing on his chair, you know, clapping like crazy for a good movie. They have various states between that. You know, he's like awake and watching. He's sitting up and watching, and then he's clapping outrageously. All right, so I love that. The pink section was great. Pink section had all the bands that were playing in town. It was before I became a political animal. I was interested in flying airplanes, but we always get the pink section was great. But it's a thick paper. It's like 3 inches thick. The San Francisco Chronicle on a Sunday, it was great paper, and it was full of leftist propaganda. And we all knew it. We didn't care. We didn't read the news. Well, maybe some of it. You know, but I think the sports page was the most read. I went for the comics in the pink section. I bought the paper for the pink section. I'm sorry. You know, I was into rock and roll too. Anyway, so that's how it works. So all these wonderful things about the internet have taken away the use of paper, so we don't have to harvest as many trees. So, of course, the lumber company's like, well, wait a minute. What are we going to do? You know, there's what? Try and sell more toilet paper and call a shortage and make one up? It's pretty much what happened. Anyway, so I'm really digressing here. So but back to the quote here. It fascinates me that he would say this. Okay, so who's he talking to? Is he talking to the nation? No, he doesn't care about you. He's talking to the Democrats. That's who he's talking to. He's talking to the Democrats, and what he's saying is, we have to change our policy. This has gone over so badly. We've gotten away with this much, but America is not going to tolerate an open border in the 2022 midterms. That's what he's saying. He's talking to Democrats. He's not talking to Biden, because if he wants to talk to Biden, he'll just haul him aside and just yell at him, you know, and then Biden will say Taliban and everything will be fine. Oh, by the way, has anybody noticed that not a single member of Congress asked any of those three, General Milquetoast, Secretary of Defense, or the other general, why they haven't made any effort to get our weapons back? You know, I mean, granted, leaving them there was such a huge mistake. It's one of the greatest mistakes the military and Thief in Chief Biden have ever made. But why didn't anybody, even Matt Gaetz, our own congressman here, who did a nice job of interviewing the three stooges up there on the panel, but he didn't ask that question. You know, I mean, it's bad enough to, you know, and the other question that nobody asked, that, see, this is why Matt Gaetz should call my show, because I would have given all these questions ahead of time, all right? You know, not that he needs my help to answer questions, but, I mean, I ask questions that nobody else asks. So if he really wants to get involved, he should, you know, call the show. Hear that, Matt Gaetz, you know, dear representative, first congressional district, you know, Florida, Escambia County, Okaloosa County, Santa Rosa County. Yeah, you. Haven't called the show for almost 2 years now. Actually, no, I think it's over 2 years. 3 years now? Oh, that's all 3 years. Anyway, so he's missing the chances to get the questions that I believe he should ask. First of all, you know, was Bagram Airport closed in order to allow 1,000, you know, or what, 130,000 Afghani goat herders, you know, and their 5-year-old child brides with these old guys to come into the country, and they closed Bagram because they never could have gotten into Bagram. You know, we had an American security force around Bagram. That was our airport, right? So instead, he closes our airport, you know, and then they go to the other one, the Karzai Airport, you know, in downtown Kabul. Beautiful. And you know, you never see any tourist ads for Afghanistan, right? Oh, you know, like at least with Jamaica, come back to Jamaica, you know, but in Afghanistan, you know, my name is Ah, I'm a cable dealer in Afghanistan. Come down here. Read one different place to visit. I got to work on my Arab accent anyway. So you don't hear about that. So coincidentally, and the other question was, how come 130,000 Afghanis were sitting there at the airport waiting to be airlifted to the United States? No one's asked that question either. So I want to know. I want to know where are, you know, why was there no effort, I mean none, to either destroy our weapons or get them back, even at this point. You know, we have special forces. We have raids. We can, you know, we can fly in people to fly out our helicopters unless they've been destroyed or just destroy them. You know, I mean, this is all those guns. Hey, you want to talk about gun control? You know, gun control is, this is gun control. You know, give it to your enemies. It's like they gave all the arms to the enemies so that we'd have to go back and fight our own weapons. All right. So this is what I call this is, you know, the gift of, you know, Afghanistan War II. That's what that is. Anyway, so getting back to the original question of who is Obama talking to? All right. And he's talking to Democrats. What he's saying to Democrats when he says we're a nation state, which he doesn't believe, by the way, he's a globalist. He wants global government or governance. I got to get a good definition. Maybe I'll ask Gene the difference between government and governance, because I hear that term sneaking in. And you got to pay attention to the words these people use, because every time they use a different word, you have to go, wait a minute, you know, or they use a word that's not characteristic. You know, it's like no conservative ever says alt-right, for example. So the minute you hear a leftist saying alt-right, you know they're a leftist, and you know that it's propaganda that they're trying to push on you, because, you know, conservatives, well, what's the alt-right? The alternative to the right? We are the right. Why would you need an alternative? You know, so it's kind of fascinating. All right. So this is the idea that we can just have open borders is something that I think as a practical matter is unsustainable. So what if it's not a practical matter? You know, do you think as a non-practical matter it is sustainable? Do you think if we could go into the impractical, then having an open board is a good thing? And I think that's what he's really saying. So when he says it's a practical matter, he means in terms of elections. All right. So in other words, if they're going to try and have any hope in 2022 because they don't have enough vote fraud to overturn the massive, you know, groundswell of millions upon millions of people, there's not enough vote fraud in the world that might save them. This is my hope anyway. He's saying it's a practical matter. In other words, we have to be practical now. We can't be what we are. All right. So as a practical matter, it's unsustainable. But as a realistic matter, it's as a goal, it's still our goal. Their goal is still to have open borders. You know that because in the beginning of the thief-in-chief insurrection of Biden, they had open borders. Okay, so the fact that they have open borders and have had since Biden, you know, usurped the presidency and was installed in the White House illegally, that they've had that open borders. I mean, that's one of the first things they did: stop the wall, open the borders, invite everybody in. And here we are. So that was always the goal. In other words, now I'm wondering, did they do this to get as many people in as possible, as quickly as possible, knowing full well that the country was going to rebel against it? And this is just another step, you know, and once you have a million people in here, that represents about 10 million people by the time you've brought, you know, all the grandmothers, grandfathers, cousins, aunts, uncles, you know, all the other folks that come in, plus the folks that are born here that are not citizens because they're not born to Americans, even though they're going to say they are because that's the policy, even though there's no basis for that policy in law or in the Constitution. Right? So that's where we stand right now. So they know through chain migration, they're going to get a lot more, plus all the people that are coming in and, you know, all those folks that are born here. They're going to say they're citizens. That, you know, hospitals are giving away citizenship, and you know, there's no reason to do that. Of course, we have a bill against it. So think about this quote. You know, the idea that we can just have open borders is something that I think, as a practical matter, is unsustainable. See, he didn't say it was unsustainable. He doesn't say that open borders are unsustainable. You know, I wouldn't even say that. I would say open borders are criminal. You know, open borders are treason. Open borders are suicidal. National suicidal open borders, you know, is an irrational contradiction, because the whole idea of borders is that borders are a line that is closed. You know, you come through lawful checkpoints. That's how you get across a border. Okay, you get across a border. You don't walk there. You know, you don't just walk in. Okay, so the idea of having an open border is insane. That doesn't exist. And so oxymoron, you know, call it what you will. It's worse than oxymoron. Oxymoron is two opposite things, like jumbo shrimp. Which you can have, right? But you can't have open borders because therefore you have no border. It's like the debt ceiling, okay? So with the debt ceiling, if you raise the debt ceiling, then there is no debt ceiling, all right? Mark Levin had something interesting on this last night where he was talking about the debt ceiling. He's covering stuff that we covered, you know, last week. Okay, yeah. Sorry, Mark, we beat you to it. But maybe he listens to my show and doesn't say anything. You think? I mean, I've tried contacting a show. You never know. You never know what these people are doing. It's like when I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. And I sent it to AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, whose chief reviewer, you know, sent it back to me. They refused to review. It's probably the first aviation book they've refused to review. Maybe because, you know, they didn't get kickbacks from, you know, the publishers that usually do that. I don't know. I'm just speculating. You know, what, however that thing works. You know, the comment on my book was, you know, this is a worthless diatribe of my own opinions. Oh, really? That's like saying I'm not following the science, or it's just my opinion. This is what the leftists will say. Okay, fine. Well, my book's still selling, and, you know. And I think they actually stole most of my ideas, because every time I took a flight instructor refresher course, you know, things that came right out of my book were suddenly the new policy of AOPA when they did their flight instructor refreshers. It's fascinating to watch. Okay. So people are happy to steal your ideas and not give you credit. But if you value the ideas for themselves, it really doesn't matter. I know I said it first because it's in print. You know, my book was written in 1992 and published in 1994. And everything that follows that, you know, comes right out of my book, obviously, you know, started there. So it's fascinating to see how. So the origin of the ideas is important to the originator, but it's not important to the overall. Even though I do like to mention it every once in a while, just because. All right, so that's what's happening there. It is a fascinating to me thing to watch this. And so again, when you see Obama on camera, you have to know this is planned, this is orchestrated. He's doing it on ABC News. He didn't go on One America News, you know, because they'd actually ask him real questions. I don't think there are any follow-up questions to this. But you watch his body language. You watch everything that he does. It is really quite fascinating. All right, so I wrote something that I'm going to leave you with. I'm going to play a couple things and take a quick break and be back. And we'll do our Santa Rosa Volunteers in the second hour, I think. It's the one from last week, because Monday's the day that I make the new one for next week, which will be, I think, Federalist Paper number 6, as we gradually work through the Federalist Papers. But if you get a chance, watch the Obama video. YouTube has it. You know, just look up, you know, Obama, you know, unsustainable open borders. You'll find it really easily, really easy. Anyway, so I wrote this, you know, just on the topic this morning. I said, this will take some explaining. Obama runs the Biden insurrection. Obama wants open borders. He now realizes he has gone too far and has to pull back. Biden is the perfect foil because Obama can run the country from behind the scenes and still blame Biden when something goes wrong. This allows him to be the hero calling open borders unsustainable, and we'll have the left criticize the policy, so Biden will pull back and hold at the million or so people so far. What we need is for Biden to slip and say publicly of Obama, I was just doing what he told me. That's what a good vice president does. So that's my fondest wish, is that Biden will slip up and he'll say, well, I was told to pull back on the borders. So here's what's going to happen. By criticizing Biden openly and by talking to Democrats, this is a big signal that he can't do privately. He needs to do this publicly, obviously. It's a big signal that it's okay to start closing up the borders a bit, that the acting President Obama directing thief in chief Biden, saying, okay, we need to pull back. We've done enough. We'll never get through the midterms if this open border situation exists, as it, even though we want it, if it exists through the next campaign season, you know, we're going to be mincemeat of in the media. And so, because even the leftist media is, you know, going, we got some problems here. We can't cover for you guys. So that's what I think is happening. And so we're going to talk about body language a little bit and any other things you want. And Gene, you know, is working on a bunch of stuff. You know, if he gets a chance to join us, we'll also. But there's just tons of things going on, so much going on. But let me just, seeing as I was talking about my book, let me tell you about my book. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing,
Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. I'm sorry, I just felt like doing that. It's Monday morning. I want to wake everybody up. Woke Gene up. Good morning, Gene. How are you doing today?
I had spent a day. Bumper Jack is asking about the vaccine, and that vaccine is made from disabled antigens from the specific virus. So how is the vaccine made without no virus to make it form?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy to explain. Yeah, I mean, in fact, I just noticed it. I was watching it during, I was reading this during my break real quick, but when I was playing our piece for Eric Colley, who's brilliant. He's great. Anyway, I looked at this and I had to laugh a little bit. So Bumper Jack, thank you so much for using live chat. You really do, you make my day. It's every time. Uh-oh, background noise.
Oh, shoot, hold on, that's my...
I won't tell you what it sounds like.
Okay.
Oh, that's better. Thank you. Yeah, if feel free to mute, you know, if something, you know, it's funny. We get all kinds of noises. We get cats and birds and, you know, we get cars starting up. We get truck noise. We get everything in the background here. But anyway, so Bumper Jack 5 says, I have a question. You say the vaccine was made years before, and I'm not sure it says 10/04. I'm not sure what October, are we talking about October 2004? I don't know what the date is. Or 10/04/06. So anyway, whatever it is, I'm not sure what the date is. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'll explain the whole thing. It says the vaccine is made from disabled antigens from a specific virus. So how come is the vaccine made with no virus to make it from? Very simply, okay, that what you're talking about actually is a traditional vaccine, right? So in a traditional vaccine, they actually take an inert form, because you don't want to get people sick from the vaccine, even though that's what happens. You take an inert form of the virus. You take it in a form where your body will recognize this as a foreign agent, as something really bad that needs to have antibodies form for it. So when the real virus comes along, you've already had the warm up, all right. And so your body can go, oh, I saw this before. This is bad stuff. Let's attack it. So the body is supposed to be much more prepared to handle the actual virus when it comes in contact with it. Which means the vaccine has to come long before people are exposed to the virus. Otherwise, it's too late. Okay. Now, since the virus was released, you know, and was basically gone by July of 2020 until they brought it back, you know, with the masks and mandates and lockdowns. And of course, what really accelerated the injuries and deaths was when they started the vaccines in 2020. Senator Johnson just did a wonderful piece. Actually, this is a good time to talk about that. Senator Johnson does this incredible piece where he shows that COVID from January 2020 was dropping like a rock. It was disappearing. And the death rate was headed for zero. In fact, it was practically zero. And then in December of 2020, they start this mandatory, what they're calling a vaccine, which is really a messenger RNA protein spike infusion, which actually carries COVID. It actually teaches your body how to make COVID. I'll explain that in a minute too. So what happens is they've actually caused the death rate to spike because of the vaccine. Because before the vaccine, this thing was done. It was done several times. It was done in July, and then they brought it back with all this other crap,
with the lockdowns and they made people so miserable and so stressed out that, of course, COVID caught back on, you know. And I think that was part of the plan, was to have people stressed completely and filled with terror of getting COVID. So they actually got COVID because their resistance was so lowered by this. Plus the drug addiction, suicides, and everything else that happened. All right. So that's the traditional vaccine. That's how the flu shots allegedly works, is that you have an inert sample of this, whatever the virus is. You know, they have the DNA, but not a form that can get you sick, allegedly. But that's how it works. That's a traditional vaccine. Okay. Now, what's going on with messenger RNA is something completely different. So Moderna was formed in 2010, specifically to create this vaccine. But the research has been going on long before. It started back in the 80s, you know, AZT and AIDS and all the stuff that Dr. Fascist has been involved with over the years. And so I basically proved in my shows, you can go back to March 15th, 16th, and 17th of 2021. So earlier this year, March 15th, 16th, and 17th, go back to those shows, and you'll see that the vaccine obviously came before the virus, because the virus was created and tailored to the vaccine, which isn't a vaccine. So let me explain how this works. So messenger RNA, that's what tells your cells how to divide and make the next DNA. It's the instructions, okay? It's the instruction manual, all right? So they designed this on a computer. Now, what I don't know, that I think either I'll ask Gene to do or I'll do myself, is to find out how they go from a computer-generated genetic code to a biological genetic code that goes into your body as messenger RNA that takes over your cells and teaches your cells how to actually make COVID. You know, they said they're making antibodies to it, but your body makes the antibodies. So the messenger RNA teaches your body how to make COVID. And of course, as they do that, they make the whole COVID cell that your body's supposed to attack and kill. But it doesn't work that way, because messenger RNA makes trillions of these cells, and they all have spike proteins, okay? The spike protein is as deadly as the virus itself, if not more so. The spike protein breaks off these cells that your body has been taught how to make with this messenger RNA spike protein infusion. Those spike proteins invade every organ of your body. They create blood clots. They cross the blood-brain barrier of your brain. They get everywhere. They cause myocarditis, the swelling of the heart, which apparently has like a 50% death rate after 5 years. All right? They're not telling you that. I read that this morning from an affidavit from a lieutenant in the military. We'll get to that too. But this is not a vaccine.
Sad.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's
considering that kids are the ones that are, a lot of young people, children are getting myocarditis. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, and they shouldn't be. There's no excuse.
Right.
What's going on now is genocide. I mean, this is absolute genocide. But it's also a lie. You know, it's bad enough that they're just lying completely. So anybody that gets the vaccine that's not a vaccine is basically getting an agent in their body that teaches their body how to make and spread COVID. So your body actually ends up creating trillions of these COVID cells, and the spike proteins break off to invade you. And the spike protein is COVID, all right? There was a doctor, I forgot, I don't even get the sources, but anyway, the spike proteins, when they've injected animals, they've done research studies, they've injected animals with just the spike proteins, and they come down every bit as much with COVID as if they did a whole viral cell. So the spike protein is the disease. So they're injecting you with COVID, allegedly saying that you're taking so that you don't get COVID. Well, of course, the more people that get the vaccine, the messenger RNA shot, the more people actually getting COVID, because they're injecting COVID into their bodies. And they say, look, we need more people vaccinated. Look, these people are getting COVID. Okay. Well, they're getting COVID from the shot. You know, they're getting it from the jab. So this is the greatest self-perpetuating, you know, genocidal marketing hoax that the world has ever seen. Okay. And that's how this works. So the more, that's why the death rate increased as soon as they started, giving out these messenger RNA shots, but they created on a computer. That's why there's no disabled antigen in it. There is no disabled. There's nothing disabled about it. It's very able. It's very active. All right. And it says, you know, how do you make a virus? It says you have to have a virus to make a vaccine. Yes, you do. Bumperjack is correct. You do have to have a virus to make a vaccine. But when you design it on a computer, you don't. And what they're making is not a vaccine. And that, I believe, is the answer to that question. Gene, did I leave anything out? We're pretty much covered. What do you think?
No, it's good. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, mark the tape, everybody, as Rush used to say. Rush, I miss Rush. You know,
yeah, I do too.
I wish, you know, I didn't know that he made that announcement that he was terminal, because I always wanted to call his show, but I didn't want to look arrogant and self-serving. But I think had I known that he was terminal, because he never talked about it. He only talked about it once, because that was Rush. But I wish if I had known, I would have tried harder to get through and say, Rush, before you go, I just want you to know that talk radio is going to go on. It's going to become Action Radio, and here's what's going to happen. And so hopefully Rush is looking down going, yeah, Greg, yeah, go for it, dude, or whatever Rush would say. But I like to think that we're he's kind of watching what we're doing and going, huh, that's interesting. So we shall see. Anyway, so that's what I think of that vaccine thing. And it's just all part of the misinformation. All right, let's go back to Obama lying. And, Gino, I'd be curious, you know, you being in the health professions and you know, just what you think of all this. So I found this article, Learning Mind. And this is going to go right into the – we have an X-Radio Mind Project. This is where I talk about all this stuff. All right. The body language of lying. You can use this in your relationships too, okay? Use it with your boss. Use it with politicians during the debate. In fact, I'm looking for a body language expert to review the debates when they start up this year. So this is going to be fascinating. So the body language of lying, top secrets revealed by psychologists. All right. This is kind of like a leftist thing, but I don't think they realize we're going to use it too. The article, and let's see if I can get a is this psychology, mental health. Is there an author? They don't give an author. Let me see if I can. It's probably at the end. I think it's just by the whole organization. Let me see if I can find something in the bottom here to tell you. Oh, here we go. Margaret Banford, MA, contributing writer at The Learning Mind. Oh, at Learning Mind. Professional writer and tutor with a master's degree in digital journalism. Oh, okay. So she types on a keyboard. That's good. All right. So she says, when someone is lying, you can see the signs in their body language. That's why learning to read these signs is very important. Yeah, especially you folks that are, you know, dating. I think it's critical. All right. She doesn't say that I do. She says, this is not to say that everybody you meet will be a liar and a cheat, of course. Yeah, I don't know. Most people until proven otherwise. Yeah, I'm just cynical. She says, simply put, knowing how to spot the signs of lying will make your life easier. That's for sure. Body language is a dead giveaway when it comes to lying or any kind of inauthentic behavior. Knowing when somebody's body language is giving away their true thoughts and intentions is critical. Yeah. So before you accept that marriage proposal, read this article, right? This, I'm sorry, relationships are not my specialty. It's just, she says, this skill can be particularly useful when it comes to business relationships. So I think relationships in general. Yeah, business too. She says, the underlying theory is that people can't control their body language when they are lying. Well, some can. The psychopaths can. That's the whole definition of a psychopath or a sociopath, that they can control their body language when they're lying. So you really don't know because they don't think they're lying. They've convinced themselves that their lies are truth. They've convinced themselves that anything they say is for the good, even though it's only for the good for them. You know, and that's why I say the love of power is the root of all evil. Money is just like a, you know, an addition. It's kind of like the icing on the cake. So if it's true, she says, when body language and an oral language match up, everything is fine. Otherwise, something is wrong. Yeah, it's really difficult. If you're an honest person, it's really difficult to lie. I mean, you can do it, but you know, the giveaways are all over the place. So honest people trying to lie, that's how you can tell an honest person. They have a really tough time lying. Okay, so that's a good thing. She says, inconsistencies. People normally have a specific body language. This tip is only useful if you know someone well enough to know what their normal is. Unfortunately, sometimes people who normally act one way can't act in another. The body language of lying will tell you that this means they are not being honest with you. One prominent example of this is when people use the wrong hand to gesture with. Most people will use their dominant hand to make gestures, which are important. If they suddenly switch, that means that a person is most likely lying to you. Okay, so Obama's left-handed, right? I've watched him sign bills. And so when he starts gesturing with his right hand or leading with his right hand, you know, that's one of those indications that he's probably lying. All right, I find that fascinating, you know, which leads to the question, and Gene, if you want to, you know, hop in on this one too, you know, it's like, what is it, you know, you don't tell one hand what the other hand is doing? I mean, I never knew where that expression came from, but I'm wondering if it's dominant and, I wouldn't say submissive for your other hand, that doesn't make sense, but you got your dominant hand and your, you know, non-dominant hand, you know, and I'm wondering if you want to, you know, if the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. In other words, if the right hand is lying to you. Anyway, I just, you know, these expressions come out. We don't know where they come from. All right. So then she says, the eyes have it, E-Y-E-S, as in your eyes, not I apostrophe. Eyes have it. Prolonged eye contact isn't normal. Yeah, I can do eye contact for a while, but I won't look away just because, you know, I'm not a staring contest. But yeah, it feels awkward after a while. So eye contact is fascinating. Too little, you look suspicious. Too much, you look really suspicious. Prolonged eye contact isn't normal, but you should expect people to look at you at least some of the time. True. If someone is not looking at you, then this can be a sign of lying. It can mean that people are very uncomfortable with what they are saying. Watch the video. Obama immediately looks down into the right. And I've heard that looking down into the left is a sign of a liar, but that would apply to right-handers. Since Obama's left-handed, you know, he would go to his non-dominant side, so he'd look down to the right, okay? And he does in the video. He just watch it. He very quickly drops his eyes, looks to the right, starts gesturing with both hands, but the right hand seems to be the more predominant, Okay. So he's lying. When he says that open borders are unsustainable, he's lying. He's doing that to win an election, not because he believes it. This is the whole point of what I'm talking about this morning. All right. So they say if someone is not looking at you and their eyes are darting around, hey, bingo, this can also be a sign. Darting eyes indicates discomfort. It means that people feel trapped by a situation and also that they are trying to get out of it, often by any means necessary. Yeah, that was Obama. Yeah, he was trying to get out of the fact that his open border policy sucks and that the media can't cover for him. And the insurrection is Biden. You can't do anything right, of course, because you can't do anything. You know, and this is falling apart. And they got election season coming up starting in November. That's next month. All right. So 1 year before the elections is when the election season kicks off for the midterms. And I think there's going to be such an overwhelming groundswell of support for Republicans. God knows why, but there is. As the only alternative to Democrats, it's really support for Trump. Let's be honest, it's support for Trump. And the question is, will the Democrats get enough vote fraud to overturn and maintain power or not? That's really what's going to decide the election, is the ability of the Democrats to commit vote fraud. Let's be honest here. All right, last little bit here. A corollary to this, check how long people close their eyes for. A blink doesn't last very long. If someone is closing their eyes for longer, they are doing it as a defense mechanism. This defense mechanism could be in relation to them lying to you. The way people look can sometimes be a giveaway. The direction of someone's gaze often corresponds to their dominant hand. This is exactly what I was saying earlier. I've forgotten this part of the article. It's probably where I got it from, though. If a right-handed person looks left, they're accessing their imagination. So same goes for left-handed people except in reverse. The body language of lying has them act in the opposite to their own normal. Think of why someone might need to use their imagination while talking to you. It could be because they're lying. This is the perfect explanation of what Obama did in the video. I mean, I'm so happy I found this because this report only came out, I only found it this morning. So, and then here's another one too. A few more of these here. Smile. Many people have a fake smile to go with their real one. You know how some people smile and then lie to you? That's why, all right? A real smile will have an effect on the face as a whole. People get smile wrinkles and nose scrunches when they smile. My smile, yeah, you can tell. My whole face just gets into it, right? If a person you are talking to has them, it's a real smile. If not, then it is not a real smile. A fake smile could be a sign that people are lying to you. Touch. People quite often touch their face when they lie. Well, that's interesting. This is part of them being uncomfortable with what they are doing and saying. Keep an eye out for it. This body language cue is especially true for people who don't normally touch their faces when speaking to someone. I didn't see that with Obama. I don't think he touched his face at all. But he certainly has all these other qualities of lying. Fidgeting is very common for people who are uncomfortable. Much like blinking, it is a defense mechanism meant to keep us on the ready for anything bad happening. It can function as a way of detecting lies with the body language of lying. If someone is fidgeting, it can mean that they are uncomfortable with what they are saying. If you want to see if someone is lying, watch for any untoward movements. Well, Obama's hands are moving the whole interview. You know, and when he talks about open borders, his hands are wide open, as in open. You know, he's actually making an open gesture to go along with open borders. And she says, body language, this is a conclusion here, as it has been said, should match the situation. It is very difficult to conceal your own body language, because I don't think people are aware of it. I think it's very subconscious, which is why so many people, back to the article, keep an eye on it. Whatever you are saying is mimicked in whatever you are doing. This can make lies and deceit very easy to spot, particularly when you are talking to someone you know well. So this is why debates are so important, because with a debate, you know, they don't have time to plan every line, although they try to. But body language, I love watching body language during the debate. And the last little paragraph, the last sentence here, it would have a detrimental effect on your life to constantly be on the watch for signs of lying. No, it wouldn't. It would probably be best if you didn't try and find out if everybody you speak to is lying, but it can be helpful. In business terms or when having a difficult conversation, it can be very helpful. Now, I actually just wait for the signs because I know what they are. And so as soon as when I saw Obama speaking in this interview, I went, oh, damn, he's lying. I just have to find an article to demonstrate it. And this proved it completely. Gene, what do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. I think about Gene.
I agree with the fact that lying, it's a little bit, it's not quite so cut and dry. Because I get body language people and they can pinpoint things, but I think it's not like 100% science. So I would say in Obama's case and stuff like that, that would probably be accurate. But I think, well, I was going to say too, I think that people that are good at it, yeah, I think they're not going to pick it up as easy. I could be wrong though.
No, I think he's a real practice liar. I think he's very good at it. I think he works at it. Anyway, let me play I got some stuff to do. We're gonna talk about Numbers USA has a bit on this whole open border situation. Jean, did you have a comment? I'm sorry. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just gonna say that the article here, if I can find it, it doesn't say anything about actual computer generated code, how they get it into the biological, except that the computer generated was then given to the Chinese. And to gosh, hold on just a second.
Oh, they could have emailed the code.
Yeah, yeah, but then it was, hold on, if I can find it again.
Yeah.
Oh man, it may take me a minute, but it was then sent to them, and then I think it was to, was it Pfizer? One of the, it just named one of the drug manufacturers to put it in the
Well, Moderna is the most scandalous of the bunch. Moderna was set up. In fact, the people that set it up weren't even doctors. So they, as I understand it, in fact, they didn't even have license to do what they did. So it's almost like a made-up company. It's almost like a front company. It's like a mafia front company for the drug industry.
Right.
You know?
Well, here it said it was given to Moderna to put in their vaccine so that the cells would produce this S1 spike protein synthesis, not the actual virus.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a computer code uploaded by the Chinese, communist Chinese into the United States manufacturing inject a pathogen stimulant into the U.S. population. And this guy believes that it was planned germicide. And then it says later a different person, doctor out of England, I believe, that studies of the effect of COVID messenger RNA vaccines and admitted in an interview that the inoculations from Pfizer will destroy your immune system and will require monthly injections. So isn't that interesting? Both drug companies.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. This is the scary thing about this is that the messenger RNA spike proteins not only destroy your, give you COVID, but they actually turn your immune system against you. You know, and this is how the cytokine storm gets started, because as all these, you know, trillions literally of spike protein cells are being made in your body, and all these things start floating around in your bloodstream, your body has an overreaction. And I'm not sure, there's something I heard that the spike protein, the messenger RNA, part of the message is that it actually turns off your immune system to accept these things in the first place. So it turns off part of your immune system. These spike proteins get created off the COVID cells that the messenger RNA is allowed to produce in your body, because it turns off part of your immune system. See, everything about this is backwards. You know, it's crazy. And then, of course, the more cells, the more spike proteins. And why you would need a booster is maybe just to quicken the process, because if your body can create trillions of cells based on the messenger RNA injection, why would you need more than one? And that doesn't make sense, unless you just want to sell more stuff. You know, I mean, because the idea that once it's in your body, you know, teaching your cells how to make spike proteins give you COVID. That's why all the people with these injections are coming down with COVID, because the virus is COVID. I mean, the vaccine is COVID, even though it's not a vaccine. Right? And I use that word for convenience, so you know what we're talking about. But they're actually spreading COVID. This is why Israel has the highest COVID rate in the world right now, because they're the most vaccinated, even though that what they were given was a shot that actually gave them COVID. You know, you look at the countries, what's that, Uttar Pradesh, that state in India that's almost as big as the United States population. They got 300 million people in Uttar Pradesh. And then, Uttar Pradesh, I'm not pronouncing it properly because my Indian accent is not very good. Sorry about that, India. Anyway, India listens, by the way. And so the idea that these folks are COVID-free, well, how'd that happen? Well, because they all take ivermectin, okay, which was designed for people, which I learned from Pearson Sharp on One American News First. So it was a drug designed for people before it was ever used with animals. So it's a human drug adapted to animals, not the other way around, which is the popular perception. Well, it's a horse dewormer. You know, no, it's not. Well, it is, but it actually started with human use and got a Nobel Prize for it in medicine. All right, so that's what's going on there. But the countries and the places that are adopting hydroxychloroquine as a preventive, like Africa, which has it for malaria, and India, which has it as a preventive, has ivermectin as a preventive for, I guess, you know, parasites and other problems. There's no COVID. Okay. So you tell me where the science is. All right. So here we have a big problem, because the more people they quote vaccinate with this messenger RNA, you know, spike protein generator, the more people are getting sick. That's why we still have COVID. COVID would have been gone by July of 2020 if they'd simply done nothing. Let it run its course. Herd immunity takes over. Certain amount of people get sick. Less than 1% of the population has actually been seriously affected by COVID anyway. Most of those folks were old. And the biggest affected population is nursing homes, because five Democrat governors shoved COVID-positive people in the nursing homes to kill off their elderly so they didn't have to pay for them. Call me cynical, but that's what's going on. All right.
Well, and if the vaccine works, then why do they care if unvaccinated people got it or the vaccine or not? Because the vaccine, if it works, they're not going to get it because they're vaccinated.
You know, I just had a thought that the more people that are DNA normal, the more people that are the control population to the vaccine injured, the more it stands out, the contrast between them. See, if everybody's vaccinated, you can't blame the quote vaccine, even though it's not, because everybody's in the same boat. So some people are going to get sick, some not. We can't blame it because everybody's got the shot. But the more people that do not get the shot, this is my theory. This is bouncing in my head right now. The more people that don't get the shot, that's the actual threat to the regime, because that proves when people who don't get the shot are not getting sick, are not getting having DNA problems, are not coming down with blood clots, myocarditis, you know, especially the kids. Kids are the worst people to give a shot to, because they don't have any, their immunity is 99.999%. It doesn't get much better than that. Right? You know, and so with all this going on, but that's their enemy. So that's why they have to get the what they're calling the unvaccinated population, what I call the normally healthy, normal DNA, you know, uninjured population. The more of us there are, the more it makes their already compliant, you know, vaccine injured population look bad. And the contrast between those two groups is what they're trying to avoid. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, I would believe more of that. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Did you have a story you wanted to present, or do you want to do that after Anti-Federalist number 5, or what would you like to do right now? Give you the option.
You can play the story. That's fine. Huh.
We'll see that. And if you have a story when you come back, great. If not, I want to get into an article, Numbers USA. You know, I always wonder how we're going to fill 3 hours. And I think, gee, do we have enough time to do what I want to do in 3 hours? We have Dr. Pry coming at the top of the next hour. So again, let me play you something. Let me give you the intro as to why we do what we do with Santa Rosa Volunteers. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com, srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. So that's why I do that. I should probably play that every once in a while just so folks know, you know, what's going on. Anyway, so this is the one I made from last week. And so they run basically Tuesday through Monday. And so this is Federalist Papers number 5. Anti-Federalist Paper number 5. There we go. That was the week before us. I got a few of them still here on my board. So I'll play this one for you. And then, of course, tomorrow we're going to have, Federalist Paper number 6. We're just kind of go through. Because I alternate because that's how they do it. So when a Federalist paper was written, they then would bring out an anti-Federalist. They go, no, that's a bunch of crap. He's lying. This is the real story. And so this is Anti-Federalist number 5.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. The pompous, arrogant, elitist John Jay, who wrote Federalist Paper No. 5, has such complete contempt for the American people that he obviously wants to rule over the people for their own good with his strong national constitution. However, the rebuttal in Anti-Federalist No. 5 is just the opposite. It is simple, short, honest, straightforward, takes John Jay's writing head on, and makes complete hash of John Jay's weak propaganda. Anti-Federalist No. 5 was written and signed by an anonymous author known only as An Observer. Whoever it is appeals to my sense of logic and reason to take on the elitist and powerful through quiet ridicule, where you are making total fun of them, but it's not so obviously apparent to them. This is probably the easiest of my discussions of any founding document, because all I have to do is mention some select quotes to show you how An Observer turns John Jay's writing into mush. John Jay began Federalist No. 5 with the claim that the union of Scotland and England should be the model of our states, and that a letter from Queen Anne to the Scotch Parliament would be the convincing evidence. An Observer writes, "It is a certainty that when the union was the subject of debate in the Scottish legislature, some of their most sensible and disinterested nobles, as well as commoners, who were not corrupted by English gold, violently opposed the union and predicted that the people of Scotland would, in fact, derive no advantages from a consolidation of government with England, but on the contrary, they would bear a great proportion of her debt and furnish large bodies of men to assist in her wars with France, with whom, before the Union, Scotland was at all times on terms of the most cordial amity." It appears quite clear that the Union envisioned by John Jay is based on force and subjugation. No wonder John Jay became our first Supreme Court Chief Justice. The elites were already moving in shortly after the ratification of the Constitution. An Observer further observes, "It deserves also to be remembered that the people of Scotland, in the late war between France and Great Britain, petitioned to have arms and ammunition supplied them by their general government for their defense, alleging that they were incapable of defending themselves and their property from an invasion unless they were assisted by government. It is a truth that their petitions were disregarded, and reasons were assigned that it would be dangerous to entrust them with the means of defense, as they would then have it in their power to break the Union." This definitely portends a future U.S. where the government would have all the arms and the people defenseless, all in order that the national government remain in power. In describing this absurd example in Federalist No. 5, An Observer states, "From this representation of the situation of Scotland, surely no one can draw any conclusion that this country would derive happiness or security from a government which would, in reality, give the people but the mere name of being free." The last paragraph of Anti-Federalist No. 5 is so good, there is no explanation that is needed, so let me close with this from An Observer. "I observe that the writer above mentioned takes great pains to show the disadvantages which would result from three or four distinct confederacies of these states. I must confess that I have not seen, in any of the pieces published against the proposed Constitution, anything which gives the most distant idea that their writers are in favor of such governments. But it is clear these objections arise from a consolidation not affording security for the liberties of their country, and from hence it must evidently appear that the design of Publius in artfully holding up to public view the bugbear of such confederacies can be with no other intention than willfully to deceive his fellow citizens. Publius is what John Jay called himself in the Federalist Papers. Going on, I am confident it must be, and that it is, the sincere wish of every true friend to the United States that there should be a confederated national government, but that it should be one which would have a control over national and external matters only, and not interfere with the internal regulations and police of the different states in the Union. Such a government, while it would give us respectability abroad, would not encroach upon or subvert our liberties at home. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from foundingfathersquotes.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. You know, it's so much fun having all these different things to play for you. You know, we've got, as the show grows, we have commercials now. We have, just like, any regular commercial station, we have commercials. And we play them. And we're going to have more of them, too. So, actually, Santa Rosa Volunteers is a huge, thing for Santa Rosa Volunteers because they're a wonderful organization. We work actually very closely together. The primary place we're working right now is the Illegal Alien Free Zone Act. So in other words, we're going to take Santa Rosa County here, Florida. We're going to make it the freest county in the country by example. And then we're going to provide models. We're going to be a test laboratory. I've been talking to folks about that for a little bit, that we're going to test out some ways to make this country much freer than it is. And so that we actually are the land of the free and the home of the brave. And we're going to work on that brave part too. Now I'm talking about the military that goes and fights in combat. I'm talking about all you regular folks out there that are listening and, keyboard warrioring and sharing memes and things like that, but you're not really getting involved and we need to get involved. So that's what we're going to talk about sometime soon. The Illegal Alien Free Zone Act is the opposite of a sanctuary city. So whereas a sanctuary city takes in illegal aliens and gives them aid and comfort and other treasonous things, an illegal alien free zone just the opposite. It makes it impossible for them to live there through asset forfeiture. So in other words, anything an illegal alien gains by being in the country illegally, we take. And then we sell it and give the proceeds back to the citizens of Santa Rosa County, the lawful citizens and permanent residents and things like that. So it's basically a restitution program for all the damage that illegal aliens are doing by taking their stuff and selling it and giving it to the money back to the people that had paid for the illegal aliens all this time. So to me, it's kind of like I think it's restitution. What's that word? Reparations. That's what I'm thinking of. So whenever black people today, liberal black people talk about reparations for slavery for people that, died 100 years ago. You're wrong. But this is reparations. So we need to start talking about it. In fact, Gene, I don't think we ever talked about that. Illegal alien reparations, reparations for illegal aliens. We need to charge the leftists. And this is the way, or just charge the illegal aliens themselves on the way out. So not only are we going to deport you, we're going to take your stuff to pay for your criminal time here. So Bumper Jack, who I think I'm going to probably name as official Action Radio critic because they're doing such a great job of bringing up things that we can so easily refute, that it's wonderful to have Bumper Jack 5 here. So the last, let me see, this is they say, I don't know if it's he or she, I'll call them they. I'll give you a personal pronoun, they. He says, wait, you're trying to convince people a vaccine was made which targets a specific virus without having any parts of the virus. Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. Okay. And the reason I'm doing that is because Dr. Robert Malone, who invented the virus, I've watched tons of his videos. I've listened to what he said. I've heard him on, and read his articles, and that's what it is. Messenger RNA does not need the original virus. It's personally the original idea. And this is why he's so against the what they've done with his invention. Is that it was originally designed to be tailored to the individual. So in other words, they take your genetic code and they design specific messenger RNA so that you as an individual are immune or you have a disease, treated or cured, but it's specifically tailored to you. Well, Big Pharma is not designed for individual medicine. This is what Dr. Shiva talked about a while back. Dr. Shiva, who did the forensic analysis, part of the reports, did the ballot envelopes for the Arizona audit. But he said that Big Pharma, the reason they're so heavily into vaccines or messenger RNA spike protein infusion shots now is because it's the last great area
where you can develop, you know, one size fits all medicine. Everything else is going to personal attention, going to personal care, going to, you know, there's no mass anymore. There's no, the public health is on its way out. It's personal health. I mean, that's the way things are going. And because we have the computer technology to design specific messenger RNAs to direct your cells to cure themselves of cancer, you know, as much as possible, heart disease and things like that. So that's where medicine's going. And that's why you don't need a virus, because you're doing it all on a computer. All you need is the genetic code, okay? And if you know anything about genetics, you know, the code's big. This is what's hard to do. Code's huge, you know. I mean, how much genetic code do you think there, you know, to describe your DNA? Well, it describes every function of your body, which is endlessly complex. So these DNA codes are endlessly complex and probably inadequate to the task. They're probably not complete. Anyway, so it says the mRNA, this is back to Bumper Jack, the mRNA has to have the specific virus components to make spike proteins. It does. That's what the messenger RNA is. It has the messenger, it has the genetic code to teach your body how to make COVID cells with spike proteins, you know, so that your body will create antibodies to those COVID cells with spike proteins. The problem is the spike proteins are breaking off. So the body's not getting the spike proteins. And there's just as much COVID in the spike proteins as there is in the actual virus, in the virus cell itself. So whereas your body might be able to attack some of the viruses, it's not attacking the spike proteins. And your body doesn't have the capacity to keep up with the trillions of cells that are being produced by this messenger RNA. And of course, the more shots you get, the more accelerated this process goes, which means more deaths, more injuries, and then they blame it on COVID, not on the messenger RNA shot, and that's how you're having all the problems. Okay, and so then he says, without the specific virus, that's impossible. No, it's not. It's all done on the machine. Besides, don't forget, COVID was designed on a computer. You know, SARS-CoV-1, SARS-CoV-2, and this is what gain-of-function research was all about. See, they had the vaccine first, then they had to make a virus, you know, deadly enough, contagious enough. Mostly contagious, not so much deadly. It's only deadly to certain populations. But they had to make it in such a way that the virus, they had the vaccine first. Then they designed a virus that could be, you know, assisted by the vaccine. I mean, this is business. This is just business. That's all it is, business. Okay? Once you understand that, everything else falls into place. This isn't about health. It's about business. This is a government health bureaucrat, you know, big pharma industrial complex designed to make billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. And people dying is a necessary component of the business model, because you need a certain amount of people to die, generate a certain amount of fear to get enough people in the population to take the vaccine, even though it's not a vaccine. It's a messenger RNA shot, which spreads COVID even more, which creates more fear, which gets more people to take the vaccine, and so on and so on and so on, until the vast majority of people, and Biden said like 98% of the population have to be infused with the spike protein crap, so that there's such a small population of people that have not received it that they don't have to worry about the comparison between the healthy population and the vaccinated population.
So wow, where'd that come question from? That was good, but my question then goes back to, if the vaccine works, why are people so worried about non-vaccinated people? Because if the vaccine works, then it doesn't matter if you're around people that are vaccinated or not, or unvaccinated, mm-hmm. because you're not going to get it. Yep. So right there, it tells you it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, I think my favorite example is sunscreen. You know, it'd be like, if we had a law that said everybody has to put sunscreen on to protect everybody else. You better put it on your sunscreen. I might get sunburned, you know, or the seatbelt one. It's the same kind of illogic. All right, let me change things a little bit up here. I found this article in Numbers USA. Okay, now Numbers USA is an organization I met when I was in Washington for the 2018 CPAC. Now, this is before COVID, this is before everything, all right? And so I haven't been able to go back because I started Action Radio. But now this year, I'm going to start doing conventions again and hopefully meet some of the people I met last time. You know, I met Gordon Chang, I met Grover Norquist. They were on my show after that. It was great. I mean, I love CPAC. So I'm hoping to get all of us at Action Radio, as many people as possible, to attend the next major CPAC. I think it might be in Orlando, Florida again. So we'll find out. Anyway, the more of us we can get there, the more we can accomplish, which will be great. So Numbers USA is a fascinating organization that wants to cut back drastically on legal immigration. Not illegal aliens, but legal immigration. Not only is the illegal alien invasion unsustainable, but our current legal immigration of more than 1 million people a year is also unsustainable. We cannot support that many people and not become like a dictatorship like China or an overpopulated nation like India. It can't work. And we're not the world's reserve, you know, place for everybody to go. We cannot take on the world's problems, obviously. Because the government, you know, they may want us to, but the people of this country are not going to work that hard for everybody else so they can sit around in our country. Okay, so let me get you the author here is Jeremy Beck, published Friday, October 1st. So this would have been just a few, this would have been last Friday, all right? And he's got a little chart here, top desired destinations for potential migrants. Let's talk about this word migrant for a minute, okay? A migrant by definition, old definition, not the modern one, okay? The modern one, modern definitions don't work. It's like the modern definition of herd immunity, you know, requiring that it only includes the vaccinated. That's just nonsense. Anyway, so the classic definition of migrant is somebody that goes to another country for work and goes home. That's a migrant. They come to an area, works, you know, it's like, you know, fruit and vegetable pickers that come from Mexico. I think it was the Bracero program, I think it was called years and years ago. And what was fascinating is that the Cesar Chavez, the United Fruit Workers, the American, you know, fruit pickers, got really upset at importing Mexican fruit pickers who took their jobs. So you have Hispanic Americans, you know, union run by Cesar Chavez, you know, battling against, you know, Mexican Hispanic folks. You know, I hate the word Hispanic, but I use it for convenience, you know, coming into the country. It's really quite fascinating. One of the biggest opponents of illegal aliens was Cesar Chavez, a liberal icon out in San Francisco, where he was from. All right. So top destination, of course, is the United States, followed by Canada, Germany, France, and Australia. Huh. Interesting. The countries that are going the most socialist right now. Coincidence? You tell me. So the article says, former President Obama says, we are a nation state, we have borders. The idea that we can just have open borders is something that, as a practical matter, is unsustainable. If you missed my chat in the first hour, start over the show when we get our podcast. Back to the article. Back to the article. It happens, 2021 marks the 25th anniversary of President Clinton's Council on Sustainable Development. His recommendations, after more than 2 years of study, were aimed at ensuring, quote, that all Americans are afforded justice, that's like equity, right? Afforded justice and have the opportunity to achieve economic, environmental, and social well-being. Well, if that isn't the definition of Marxism, you know, propaganda, I don't know what is. But anyway, that's what they call them. He says the recommendation specifically for a sustainable immigration policy. Well, and then he says, we believe that reducing current immigration levels is a necessary part of working towards sustainability in the United States. Let me say that again. Clinton, President Clinton's Council on Sustainable Development is quoted as saying, we believe that reducing current immigration levels, that's legal immigrants, folks, current immigration levels is a necessary part of working towards sustainability in the United States. You all get that? Okay. We need to reduce. We didn't even talk about it on the show, and I will, because I want to get one of the folks from, and I know one of the folks, he may or may not remember, but I remember, you know, one of the folks I met from Numbers USA, their big push. Look at their videos. Go just look up Numbers USA, and they'll show you some amazing videos of why legal immigration has to be cut back drastically. A million people a year is insane. The traditional number was a quarter million. Quarter million works, a million doesn't. He says immigration levels increased sharply after the 1990 Immigration Act. Who was president then? 1990. Would that have been Bush the Elder? Yeah, I think that was the end of Bush the Elder's term, the beginning of Clinton's term. Yeah, 1990 to 1996 was Clinton. I think, yeah, 1996, 2004. No, wait a minute. No, that's not right. Huh. I'll think about it. Anyway. Where was President 1990? Gene, you help me out here. Anyway, have an average out at over 1 million people since, like I said. All right, so a million people a year, there's the problem. The 1990 Act called for a bipartisan commission to study the impact of the immigration increase, and that commission also recommended reducing immigration, citing specific concern for, quote, the most vulnerable in our society. See, immigration is supposed to help everybody. We bring in immigrants not to hurt our country and not to help them. We bring immigrants into our country to help our people. That's what immigration is for. So there's an interesting graph right here. This is U.S. population 1900 to 2016, population projections 2017 to 2060 by immigration scenario. So back in 1900, we had 76.2 million people. 76.2 million. All right now, the current one is U.S. population 2016, when they measured all this, 323 million. I think it's like 330 million now. Okay, a lot of people. But it's interesting, the graph, the steady increase is pretty steady because of, you know, in many cases, legal immigration. In 1950, we had half the population we have today, 150.7 million, 1950. All right? In 2000, we went to 281.4 million people. So 1950 to 2000, over 50 years, went from 150 million to 281 million. That's a jump of 31 million people. No. Yeah, No, wait, 150. That's 50 million. 81 million people. Does that make sense? No. That's not right either. 281 plus 50. 130 million people. You know, so we almost doubled it again. All right. So my math sucks. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Well, I'll get better. Anyway, so then they have these scenarios. So they have three. They have four scenarios. U.S. population, if it just keeps going the way it's going, then they have main series. I'll see if I can get some definitions of how they do it. Then they have high immigration scenario, low immigration scenario, and zero immigration scenario. So that's interesting too. So if things keep going the way they're going, by the year 2060, we'll have 446.9 million people. All right. If we do what they call the main series, I'm not sure what that is. That's 404 million. High immigration. So if we keep going as we're going, we're going to have 376 million people by 2060. If we have, that's low immigration. High immigration, I'm getting confused here. Hang on, I'm looking at my charter. Let me just go zero immigration. This is the one that makes sense. So zero immigration, we actually lose population. So if you want to cut back and get a more sustainable country, if you cut immigration off completely, we will be at 319 million. It's a very small graph. That's why I'm having trouble with it. 2060, we can reduce our population to 319 million simply through attrition, through not taking a million people a year. Okay. So if we freeze immigration like was done during the Depression and Depression years, I think 1924 is when Ellis Island closed. So from 1924 until the Kennedy Immigration Reform Act of 1960, our immigration was almost zero. We just didn't take in people. And so I don't think that's necessarily a good idea, but taking any more than a quarter million is insane. And so that's what we're doing now. So that's the thing. So if you want to cut the population, if you just cut the immigrants coming in, we will have a natural decline in population because people are waiting no longer to have kids and it's too expensive anyway. But here's the thing, though. If you have a certain amount of wealth in the country, the GDP, the entire wealth of the United States, it's a huge difference if you divide it between 446 million people and you divide it between 319 million people. Okay, so just like inflation is increasing dollars without increasing wealth, the more people you have, all right, the more claims on wealth you have, all right? And so if we want to increase the amount of wealth per person, one of the best ways to do that, a sustainable future, you know, is to let the population start to decline back to a sustainable level. And they're saying 319. I think probably 300 million is probably, you know, a decent number. You know, more than that, we don't need. So if we sort of aim for 300 million, you know, we let 30, 40 million people decline, you know, through natural age attrition and people moving out and you know, not taking any more immigrants, not feeding the fire, that might be a good scenario. I mean, I never thought of that before either, but I think it makes sense to me that the wealth is going to be sort of not actually divided, but, you know, the more people, the more claims on wealth, the more welfare, the more tax expenditures, the more infrastructure you need, the more of everything else. The more expensive life gets less expensive when you have fewer people. I think it's just that simple. Gene, did you want to comment?
That makes sense. I was going to say George Bush was in office in 1990.
George Bush the elder, right?
Yes. He was there from 89 to 93, I believe.
Yeah, so he was elected in probably 89. He was inaugurated.
That was his one term, yeah.
It wouldn't have been 89. No, it would have been 90 to 94.
Okay.
So he was inaugurated.
Yeah, my whole computer, it took forever to find it. And it was just like, yeah, it would be 90 to 94.
Now, is anybody surprised by George Bush, the elder globalist, CIA director, you know, the person that doesn't care about, our own country, that he would do that? He would change immigration to make it easier for people to come here and screw things up? I'm not surprised. All right, so back to that's the article here. We've got a little bit of time before Dr. Pry gets here. Anyway, it says, as Obama indicated in his interview, there is a tension between Americans' openness to the world and America's ability to absorb the world, which is my point I was making earlier. The benefits of moderate immigration levels include tight labor markets, better wages, more economic opportunities for women, and the less skilled, less demand on resources and infrastructure. Greater access to the outdoors and greater hope for protecting wildlife and wild lands and open space. Just what I was saying. Okay, but this person goes into much more detail. I never know whether I read something and it's internalized in my brain or I thought of it myself. I can't really tell. But in this case, I do know that the benefits, you know, as they say, the benefits of modern, less demand on resources, which is true, and infrastructure. I was just talking about that. California doubled its population in the 30 years that I lived there. They doubled their population, and yet they did not increase their freeways, electric power plants, or reservoirs. And guess what happens? They run out of road, power, and water. And that's why those fires are so dangerous. It's not global warming, folks. It's the fact they just didn't build anything. They didn't equal their infrastructure. And they want more and more people. They want sanctuary cities. They want illegal aliens. You know, and they want power, but they don't have the knowledge to handle their power and to have it actually do good things. So let me get back to the Obama thing. And our author says, I don't know if Obama had any of this in mind during his interview. He has always been aware of the political salience of border optics, particularly after the 2016 election. Nor do I know what the White House meant when they said President Biden agrees with Obama. Of course he does. Oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Insurrectionist Biden, Thief in Chief Biden, agrees with Obama. But it is clear that when it comes to immigration policy, we're moving further away from a sustainable system than at any previous time in our nation's history. So that I find interesting too. They got one more little chart here. It's called Green Cards per Decade and Projection under Biden's U.S. Citizenship Act. And I'm not sure what Biden's U.S. Citizenship Act is. I don't know. I guess that's his, you know, blanket amnesty for everybody that came here illegally, which is criminal in itself. So this is interesting. This is from Jeremy Beck, the Director of Sustainability Initiative for Numbers USA, published Friday, October 1st, same as this article. Oh, yeah, Jeremy Beck is the guy who wrote the article. In 1910, we had 6,347,380 green card holders, 6 million. Okay. 1920, that had dropped to 4.2 million. By 1930, the Depression, we had 699,000. We had fewer than a million people with green cards. Then in the 50s, it went to 2.4 million. 60s, 3.2 million. In the, what's that here? 70s, 4.2 million. 80s, 6.2 million. And at the end of the 80s was the 1990 Immigration Act that Gene just pointed out was during the George Bush the Elder administration. We went from 6 million green card holders to 9.7 million. And in the 2000s, 10.2 million. And currently we have 10,633,446 green card holders. We have 10 million people waiting to become citizens. Isn't that special? But at least they did it the right way. They came, but we need to reduce that number by just setting a new quota. Instead of having, you know, having 10 million, we should have maybe 2 million. And instead of letting in a million people a year, we should probably let in 100,000 until we get these numbers down. And that's what I think of that. Any questions? Otherwise, we're going to we can always go back to bumper check and talk vaccines. But that's basically what I wanted to cover as far as that goes. This morning, and we still have a little bit of time, 23 minutes left before we get to Dr. Pride. So Numbers USA, Gene, if you have a comment, otherwise I'm going to move on to something, many of my many things here. Oh,
well, I just want to bring up a comment. This has nothing to do with what you're saying, but for any of your listeners out there that did this, I want to say thank you, because Stuart Scheller, the guy, one of the Navy person that was put in jail, whoever did it, I an organization, but they're raising money, and he's got over $2 million, or they raised over $2 million for him already. So
wonderful.
I just think that's great that, you know, someone like that, that he lost his retirement, and they're treating him like crap. But the article I saw about this, one of the Congress people or someone from the government talked to him over the weekend and said there's many people in jail, many military people just like him. And how sad is that, that they can't, I mean, I know you're not supposed to speak out when you're in the military, but when there's wrong stuff done, there should be a reason to speak out and demand justice. But this article was interesting because they said that it's sad that the higher-ups in the military are not concerned about what they're saying. They're concerned with their image, and that's what it boils down to. They don't care that they said anything. It's just that it's messing up their image. And really, I don't think what they said, any of these people could have said to mess up like Miley's image. He messed it up himself by his incompetence.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's interesting, too, that they don't care about the fact that they brought in 130,000 Afghanis. I want to know who ordered that. This gets back to my question.
Exactly.
When I had these folks before Congress. You know, that would have been my first question. My first question would have been, you know, have you had communication with former President Obama in the last year? That's my first question. My second question is, what did you say? And they would say, well, that's privileged conversation. I'd say, no, it's not. Obama's not a government official anymore. He's a private citizen, so it's not official at all. And so then we find out what happened. But it's too much coincidence that we had 100,000 Afghanis suddenly show up at an airport. How do they know? How do they know that we're going to have this huge military airlift? I mean, this had to have been prearranged. So,
right.
And
why didn't they take people that already had their passports and stuff? Well, I guess a lot of them had to throw them away. But it doesn't make any sense. The legal Americans weren't brought here, but they brought a lot of illegals.
Well, it does make sense if you look at it from Obama's point of view. He wants to Muslimize America. You know, he wants to have as big a Muslim population of Sharia law people that don't care about the Constitution as possible. I mean, why do you think we have the Somali community? Why do you think we have Ilhan Omar in Congress? I mean, this is an organized effort to destroy our Constitution, destroy our freedom, bring in people that don't know about individual rights and don't care, you know, that they're under Sharia law. They're used to a dictatorship. I mean, look what's happening in Afghanistan. It's horrible for women, especially. You know, if you ever want to do a report on that, feel free. But, you know, women, as I heard over the weekend, can't drive anymore, can't work, can't go to school, can't read. I mean, books are outlawed. They have to wear burqas, and they become, you know, pre-middle ages, you know, substandard citizens. It's horrible what's going on.
Yeah,
but I don't think they care.
Sense. I mean, because that's what life was before, you know, we stepped in, and who would have thought it was going to change once we got out?
No, I did. I knew it was going to go right back to where it was because there's no choice.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
you can contain a situation, but you can't change it. You know, you can't change who the people are, and who the people are is the Taliban. That's who Afghanistan is. All right. And so the fact that we were there trying to make them a Western democracy, I'll use your words, Gene. Are you kidding me?
Ain't gonna happen.
But this is all on purpose, okay? So they closed Bagram so that they wouldn't have 100,000 Afghanis barred from entering the airport, and they would have had, if they kept Bagram open, they could have gotten out all the Americans, all the our friends, all our allies, all the people that helped us, got them all out secretly, flown them all out, all right? Before, and not made an announcement, not made a policy, just, you know, tap on the shoulder, hey, we need you and your family right now. Oh, wait, where is it? Just trust me. Just go to Bagram Airport right now. Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know,
well,
and they would have, you know, they would have raced to Bagram, and they would have flown out secretly while the military was still there. I mean, that's not the proper way to do it. So the fact they didn't do that, I mean, that's so blatantly obvious that a 5-year-old would understand that you get your friends out first before your enemies. But
well,
if you want
your equipment.
Well, that's the next question. I want to finish this one first. The idea is this was a resettlement. This was an Afghan community building exercise. All right. The American, you got to understand to the global. Well, that's, I mean, to everybody, I want people to understand to the globalists, American individual citizens don't count. That's why Obama never rescued hostages in other countries. He didn't care. And when that poor man, that young man that came out of North Korea and it was here before he died. Yeah. You remember him? I forgot his name.
Yeah.
Roundtree, Braintree.
From Cincinnati. Very sad, yeah.
Yeah, if you can look up his name real quick, I want to pay tribute to him because he suffered horribly for something that was – he made like one little comment against North Korea while he was there. It's a weird name, but I can't remember it. Anyway, so he comes back, dies. They brought him back basically so he didn't die in North Korea. And Obama never cared. I mean, he never – the Marine that made a wrong turn at the Mexican border – wasn't trying to go into Mexico, got in Mexico by accident. And then they found guns in his car because he was hunting, you know, which is perfectly legal on our side of the border. But in Mexico, you can't have guns. So they arrested him for bringing gun running into Mexico. It's like, I was just going hunting. I made a wrong turn. Okay, anyway. So Obama left him.
Okay.
I think Trump got him out. Yeah.
Excuse
What's
me.
His name?
Name was, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the last name right, so I'm sorry, but it's Otto Warmbier.
Warmbier.
W-A-R-M-B-I-E-R. W-A-R-M-B-I-E-R.
Yeah, Warmbier. Yeah, I think it's German. Warmbier.
And how
so,
sad.
Oh, it's
sad.
Terrible. Yeah, yeah. Then there was the other, seeing as you're so good at this, the Marine that was captured in Mexico who was just hunting, you know, took a wrong turn, ended up in Mexico inadvertently because you can't turn back once you cross a certain point. I guess he missed a sign or something like that. Campanera, Campanella, Campa something or other. Starts with a C. Was a Marine. And Obama left him there. He didn't care. He left in Mexico for like 2 years. I don't know if it came out privately or however it was, but Obama didn't care about individual Americans. They never do. Globalists care about groups. Okay, so it's the group that's important. So the Muslim Afghani goat herding Sharia law, you know, peasants that he's bringing in that were the part of the airlift. Go ahead.
His name was Jerome Slaughter.
Okay, that doesn't sound familiar, but I thought it was a different name. Okay, you know, I could be wrong. I might be thinking of someone else. Then. So what's their story?
Okay, so hold on. He was a 38-year-old who planned a deer hunting trip within a few hours from his Houston area home, and he took the wrong turn and wound up in Mexico.
Yeah, okay, that's the person then. All right. Well, I thought it was
Seat's
jammed here. I thought it was a different name. That's okay. No, that's good. And so these people, you know, they were just sitting there. They weren't brought out at all. And I've forgotten how they came out, but I know Obama didn't care. He didn't make any initiatives. I think Trump was the one that got him out in 2016. If you see the story, let me know who did that. Okay, Bumper Jack's reading himself, so I'm not going to read it. It's boring. You've already made that point. I've already contradicted it. I've already proven you're wrong. So you need to come up with something else, Bumper Jack, and then we'll get back to you. I mean, you're doing well, but I just, you know, we need new information because you're repeating the same things that, you know. And that's the thing, too. When you argue with people and they start repeating the same thing, like they didn't hear what you said, you've already proven them wrong, and they don't realize they've been proven wrong, there's no point in repeating it. You're not going to get anywhere. All right. I found another article here, military.com. So the resistance, we're going to go into this more, you know, over the course of this week. There's resistance, huge resistance. There's another thing that's pissing off the left, people are trying for vaccine mandates. Hospital workers want, I mean, exemptions. You know, hospital workers, the military, police, all kinds of first responders, teachers, you know, groups of employees are saying, no, I'm not going to do this. And, of course, you know, the leftist propaganda, well, everybody has to do this. You know, no, we don't. We're still Americans. And, ooh, I got thunder bumping outside. Gene, we got thunder.
Oh, boy.
That's my warning to Gene. Gene's not here. Gene's 1,000 miles north of me. So it's fascinating that, you know, and Gene's always ready to take over. And so we'll see. It's just good. Yeah, I don't think it's too close. So I think we're okay for now. We had a lightning strike about 30 feet from where I broadcast from. And this was, I guess, a couple of months ago. And my screen just went blank. The show was gone. And I had to come back and restart the episode. So if that happens, I'll do that. It's no fun, though, because people don't listen to the split ones as much. All right. So one of the objections is military. And there's a big push for Biden, thief in chief Biden, to try and make anybody who refuses to take their messenger RNA, you know, vaccine injury shot, to be dishonorably discharged. Okay, that's criminal. You know, so not only are they giving something that is that we know is dangerous, especially and useless for young people. Young people are so healthy. I mean, military people, you can give an 18-year-old, you know, infantry airborne injury a shot because you want to make them healthier. They don't get any healthier. So to me, this is just like a stupid exercise, and you might ruin their heart and kill them, okay, especially young men. Young men are particularly susceptible to myocarditis from the vaccine, and it's got to be genetic. It's got to be something that'd be interesting too, Gene, find out where guys are more susceptible. You don't have to do it now. I'm just little projects that come up to mind, or I'll look at it myself. Why are men more susceptible to myocarditis than women? I know women have better heart protection genetically, and I think that's probably for the same reason. Guys get more heart attacks. Guys, take care of your hearts, okay? I took care of mine. But, I operated on. Yeah, go ahead, Jane.
Also, aren't they having issues with pilots now having heart attacks or something? And that would scare me.
Well, yeah. Well, in fact, I remember we reported a story that four British Airways pilots died within a week. So they lost four of their pilots, and they're still insisting everybody get this shot. So they're so co-opted by the propaganda that they're terrified. They're going along to get along, or somebody behind the scenes is ordering this. And those are the only possibilities I can think of. So we have to wait and see. But I think it's being ordered because it's so universal. And nobody's ever gone to court on the merits of this. I mean, when they go to court, they usually, you know, say it's a religious exemption or a medical exemption. And the powers that be over these people, military, teacher union or civilian, you know, administrators, de Blasio up New York, restaurant owners, the people with power that shouldn't have it, are all refusing the exemptions because they want you to have that shot. You know, you got to be one of us, all right? So as they do this, it's fascinating to watch this process reveal itself. But what's happening is that they're suing on the basis of what it seems to me, you know, you have to honor this exemption. You know, I have a right to a religious exemption. Otherwise, you know, and it's very simple to me. It's First Amendment, all right? So religious exemptions mean that, the Congress cannot, you know, create a law establishing a religion, which I think is what this whole COVID cult is. COVID cults become a government religion, and we can charge it on that basis. But the other one, that's more theoretical, but the practical one is the government cannot, prevent the free exercise of religion. This is the First Amendment. Congress shall not make a law establishing a religion nor prevent the free exercise thereof. Well, a religious exemption is the free exercise of religion. So on First Amendment grounds, they can't refuse a religious exemption. They don't have to make you, they can't make you test your faith or prove your faith or ask you how long your faith has. We, and actually, I might as well talk about this now. We're going to do this later in the week, but Gene doesn't even know this yet. But I have researchers across the country that send me stuff. And of course, they'll remain anonymous so I can keep getting the stuff. But we've gained access to what the military is saying and what they're telling their chaplains of how to interrogate people with a religious exemption to try and talk them out of it. It's fascinating. I'm still reading it. I'm going to get some more information. I'm going to talk to some people. We're going to have a report on this, but I got the papers. Okay. So I'll let you know what the military is saying, but they're basically directing the chaplains to intimidate anybody in the military who wants to go for a religious exemption and how to talk them out of it. That's criminal. You're not supposed to do that. Okay. A religious exemption, First Amendment right. All right. So anyway, we'll get more into that. That just came to me fairly recently, but that's in the works. All right. Gene, did you have a...
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, well, I know people that put in religious exemptions, and they're still waiting to hear back. And I think that's horrible. How long are you going to wait before you let the person know if they got the exemption or not? That should be a no-brainer.
Well, what if they say, in the meantime, you don't have your religious exemption, we're going to give you the shot anyway, making the religious exemption moot. I mean, how do you know? Well, you got to get the shot by this time.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, this one person in particular is not going to get it. But I know two people in the same situation. Well, the one didn't even do a religious exemption. And she's just like, I'm just going to bow down and get the shot. And how sad is that? Young people. It's so sad. Mm-hmm. If it would work, the vaccine would work, and it does what it says it's going to do, then it's like, it shouldn't matter if you get a vaccine or not. It should be the person's choice. Why they pretty much tie you down and say, you need to get this. And I think that's where it may come from, because where was it? A nurse went in to get a flu shot, and the person giving the shot, I accidentally gave you the jab instead. Are you kidding me? I would sue.
Oh, really?
I would sue. I mean,
it doesn't matter. It's in your system.
But even so, I would sue for the fact that, don't lie. I made a mistake. Bullshit. Two totally different medications or shots. You know, it's
what
like,
were they
how
supposed
could
to
you
get?
Make a mistake?
Was it a flu shot they were supposed to get, or what shot
they were
they
supposed
getting?
To get a flu shot. They were given the coronavirus shot.
The COVID jab? Yeah. Some mistake. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Read the vials, folks.
You should not even be working as a healthcare professional to do that.
Well, did they get in a grocery store like you can get here? I mean, we have grocery stores and drugstores giving out vaccines. They're practicing medicine, in stores.
Yeah, but the thing is, those are trained medical people doing it. It's not just someone off the street giving it. It's their medical people.
Right, but even so, this mistake was made. And how many other people had that same mistake? And why did this person admit that? Did the person look at the vial? How did they know that they were given this? Because most people, when you get the needle, most people don't read the vial that it came from. They don't read the label on the vaccine vial that they drew it from. Yeah, interesting. All right, so I got this from military.com. This is another interesting source. U.S. troops go to court seeking vaccine exemption for those who've had COVID-19. And we've here by military.com, 29th of September. So recently by Patricia Kime, K-I-M-E. So two U.S. service members who have recovered from COVID-19 are asking a federal judge to put an immediate stop to the Defense Department's mandatory COVID-19 vaccine order. Remember, this is military.com. These are the folks that, they support the military, right? Army Staff Sergeant Daniel Robert and Marine Corps Staff Sergeant Holly Mulvihill filed a suit August 17th in the U.S. District Court for the District of Colorado, seeking an exception to the order for military members who have recovered from the illness. So there you go. I mean, natural immunity is better than... these shots. Well, of course, anything's better than these shots. These shots are dangerous. But natural immunity, means you're not going to get it again. Even if you do, it's going to be very slight. In fact, you may have it and not know it. Let me put this bluntly. Everybody in this country has been exposed to COVID multiple times. And I'm talking, I don't know how many, but multiple, many, 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 many times you've been exposed to COVID. Everybody has. Okay. That was the prediction back, March 2nd in a congressional briefing by a vaccine specialist who was former public health administrator here, now works for Japanese pharmaceutical company, and briefed Congress, briefed the Republicans. Everybody gets exposed. Everybody's going to get exposed to this. Okay. You can't avoid it. It's a virus. It's in the air. All right. So of everybody who gets exposed, a certain percent are already immune just because of their natural immunity. A certain percentage are going to get it and have no symptoms at all. A certain percentage are going to get it and have some symptoms. A certain percentage are going to get it and have moderate symptoms. you know, and some have severe symptoms, and a certain percentage of the population who's already vulnerable is going to die from it. A very small percentage, less than just like 0.1%. It's a very, very tiny amount. And a lot of those folks were like nursing homes where they were dependent on care anyway. And so that's it. But so the idea that you have to, you know, give everybody a shot when the range of immunity, you know, goes from 99.99% to about 99.5%, it's still 99%. Anyway, look at it, at least 99, you know, percent of the people are going to be fine with this. And yet they want to vaccinate 99% with a shot that reduces immunity, reduces natural immunity, and makes you vulnerable to a whole set of horrible diseases, ultimately death. Anyway, as the article says, but last week the Paris attorneys stepped up the effort, requesting a temporary injunction to stop all vaccinations, yeah, that's what they call it, and a judge's order that would require the Department of Defense to exempt everyone with natural immunity from the mandate. Well, I'll bet you can, if you test almost everybody in the country, they're going to test for natural immunity because they either have antibodies that they had naturally against this. I don't know how, but some people are just immune naturally. I mean, certain people didn't get smallpox, and nobody knows why, just their genetics, all right? So they had a natural immunity to it. And like I say, most people, I think, because it's a new virus created in the lab, you know, in North Carolina probably, and then, you know, with gain of function made worse in Wuhan, China, and then from there to the rest of the world, you know, that we all had to develop a certain immunity to it. I did. I'm going to play one. I'll do that. I'll post one of my January shows from when I had COVID and when I absolutely, I suspect I had COVID. I sound terrible, you know, but I've been perfectly healthy ever since. No masks. God knows, no shot, and just normal nutrition, health, sleep, things like that. Anyway, so they said service members that have natural immunity developed from surviving the virus. Well, most people do a lot more than survive, all right? That's a bad term. Most people, you know, from, you know, I would say getting past, or anyway, the virus, should be granted a medical exemption from compulsory vaccination because the Department of Defense instruction policy reflects the well-established understanding that prior infection provides the immune system's best possible response to the virus. And that's in the law. So let me read that again. Here we go. Service members that have natural immunity developed from surviving the virus should be granted a medical exception from compulsory vaccination because the Department of Defense instruction policy reflects the well-established understanding that prior infection provides the immune system's best possible response to the virus. So there you go. That's in the lawsuit. That's in the DOD. That's in all those places that it needs to be to get the word out. So there you go. There's your lawsuit. The article says the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends the COVID-19 vaccine for patients who have contracted COVID-19. Well, that's stupid. A study published August 6th, that's when the atomic bomb was dropped, by the CDC found that people in Kentucky who had COVID-19 and were unvaccinated were twice as likely to be reinfected than those with COVID-19 who were fully vaccinated. That's their terms. I'm just using that for convenience. All right. Anyway, I think that they had to put that in, but yeah, I'll skip the CDC propaganda stuff. This is actually a fairly long article. Oh, it's a lot more longer than I thought. I just caught this again recently. Well, I'll go over that and see if I want to broadcast more about it. We're going to have Dr. Rye here in just about 3 minutes or so. Anyway, but that's the thing, is that natural immunity is your best bet. I mean, Rand Paul says that. Dr. Senator Rand Paul says that all the time. Natural immunity is the best, you know, best thing out there. That's what you need. Anyway, so this is what the military is doing. So I think religious exemptions should be automatic because your First Amendment allows you to practice, says that the Congress cannot stop the free exercise of religion. And by virtue of the 14th Amendment, that extends to everything else as well. All right. So, and then medical exemptions. Yeah, if you already had it, at least they're going on the merits. This is what's different about this lawsuit. They're going on the merits, which I think is really incredible. All right. I'll play a couple things for you. And Dr. Probe with just a little bit, and then we'll be back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction.
please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Yeah, I made that one before the election. It's amazing how prescient, I guess, or fortuitous it was that's exactly the way things turned out. I made that as a sarcastic piece because I never expected Biden to actually be in the White House at this particular time. One more, and then we'll get to Dr. Pry.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
Now, Dr. Pry, I didn't think you heard what I call my surf promo, or surf music in the background. We had a lot of fun here. I got all these things to play with, all these buttons and things like that. But, yeah, show's growing. Things are happening. It's getting very exciting around here. We're now 3 hours, 7 to 10 Eastern, 6 to 9 Central Time. So I've got a couple of questions for you, but I want to hear what you have to say first, sir, and take us into national security and what's going on. What do we need to know, that especially what we're not being told?
Well, First, I'm calling you from I'm in southern Florida now. I'm in the vicinity of West Palm Beach, and I pulled over into a parking lot to do our interview.
Well,
so
thank
I hope you.
I appreciate
hear
that.
Me.
No, it's a little quieter than normal, but yeah, you're fine. And if you have to leave early for any reason, if something happens, but feel free. But yeah, I'm just glad you were able to call in. That's really nice of you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, not at all. In fact, if nothing else, your show is always therapeutic for me, and you will provide your psychiatric services again this morning.
Okay, well, I'll do my best.
I'm a bit peeved. I've actually been looking forward to the show this morning so I can complain about the state of defense journalism. I had one of the more important national security developments. China is developing a non-nuclear EMP weapon to fit into a hypersonic warhead. All right.
Okay.
This is something that I've been predicting, is one of the future threats that faces us, the combination of EMP weapons and hypersonic weapons. Now, this is a non-nuclear EMP weapon, all right?
Okay.
It's an explosively driven type, and most journalists have never heard of non-nuclear EMP weapons. They're also called radio frequency weapons. So I got an inquiry from a gentleman. Now, I don't want to beat him on. I mean, is a gentleman named Michael Peck, who writes for Forbes, as a defense writer. And
okay.
I provided him with my most recent book, Blackout Warfare, which has got a whole chapter on non-nuclear EMP weapons. And I provided him with an unclassified report from a Chinese scientist that was published in a journal that talks at great length about non-nuclear EMP weapons to show their interest. So I think I went above and beyond in responding to his query. He didn't even send me a thank you by email, by the way.
Oh, no. What a jerk.
Maybe his thank you was because he did quote me pretty extensively in his article in Forbes, which I think was published on Friday. But
okay.
And here's the thing that gets my goat. And it's not just Michael Peck, but it's the whole problem with all of them in defense journalism. He would write about the EMP weapons, and several places in the article he'll put in a comment that that some say the EMP threat is overblown. All right, some say the EMP threat is overblown. It is just astonishing to me how those who say the EMP threat is overblown have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're non-experts. They have a political axe to grind because anti-nuclear left have always, not only don't they understand the nuclear EMP threat, but they associate EMP with nuclear weapons. And because they're anti-nuclear, they want to reassure everybody that we don't have to worry about this dimension of the nuclear threat. All right. And now that's
mm-hmm.
extending to the non-nuclear EMP weapons as well. I would love to hear somebody someday write, climate change, according to some, is overblown. or COVID,
some people say
according
there is
to
climate
some,
change. Yeah.
is overblown.
Yeah.
Right, right. Or cyber warfare, according to some, is overblown.
Right.
You take something like cyber warfare, the more catastrophic dimensions of it. And I definitely
mm-hmm.
think that we have to be worried about the catastrophic dimensions of cyber, the more catastrophic scenarios like blacking out national electric grids. That's entirely possible, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are critics who claim that cyber warfare is overblown.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're not politically correct, they haven't gotten the, they don't have the, because they're not politically correct, they're not on the left-wing side of the agenda. Those people's views on the idea that cyber threats are overblown never get quoted, just like the fact that there are lots of climatologists. In fact, I think a majority of serious climatologists think that climate change is overblown. Okay.
But I've had a couple on my show
in the press.
Yeah. you ever heard of Gregory Wrightstone and Mark Moreno? They've both been on my show. Gregory Wrightstone's a friend of the show. He's been on a few times. He's really busy now, so it's hard to get him. But I've got recordings of him. We talked about this. You know, I would frame your sentence with one more little thing. People, you know, some say that EMP, you know, weapons are over, or some people say, who have no experience in this area, you know, say that EMP weapons are over.
Yeah,
so you
got to
put something in that they're not qualified. Some people without experience in this field say that, you know, this is overblown. So that you need that qualifier because they're trying to dismiss you.
There's a non-expert opinion out there that the EMP threat is overblown. And and that would be acceptable to me if they put in that word non-expert. But on other kinds of politically correct, left-wing corrects like climate change, you know, they don't concede that there is an expert threats that are. The other thing that about it that annoys me is, you know, right in my book, Blackout Warfare, in the chapter that I referred him to, and as well as in the Chinese technical report that was provided, you know, the threat is not merely theoretical. There's huge quantities of empirical data on the actual EMP threat. We have EMP simulators. The Chinese have got EMP simulators. I've talked about on our show, on your show, in the past about CHAMP, the U.S. Air Force version of a non-nuclear EMP weapon, how you can actually Google CHAMP and see CHAMP destroying electronics right in front of your eyes, you know, in an extremely sophisticated, devastating way, demonstrating that it can knock out command and control systems, electric grids, all kinds of things. Now, how can it be overblown? I mean, it's like saying the threat from nuclear weapons is overblown, you know?
How can
it be overblown when you've got the actual empirical evidence? It's not a theoretical thing. You know, there's plenty of data, including the demonstrated effectiveness of these weapons to destroy things. And I've got a whole subsection in my chapter that actually talks about the effects on electric grid electronics, the field strengths that are necessary that have been demonstrated by non-nuclear EMP weapons, to destroy all kinds of electronics and electric grids. So, you know, but anyway,
fascinating. I want to pursue this a little bit because, you know, the whole idea of journalists, they're supposed to journal. They're supposed to have expertise themselves. So does Michael Peck, an unfortunate name, Mr. Peck, does he have any credentials in this area? That'd be the first question. And also, they're missing the point. Whether it's non-nuclear or whether it's nuclear, it's still an EMP and it still can have catastrophic results. They're missing the point. They're going for the delivery of the weapon without the actual effect of the weapon. And this is where I think they're missing the point too. Make sense?
Yes, that's right. I agree with you there. But also, as you said, you know, as a journalist, he's supposed to do the research. I mean, I gave it to him on a silver platter. If he'd bothered just to read the chapter or to read the Chinese document, you know, it's right there. The empirical data on the effectiveness of non-nuclear EMP weapons, and of course, nuclear EMP weapons are even more effective. Oh, one of the other things that I found, you know, because he influential, is that he does agree. I pointed out in my book that there's a technological revolution going on with non-nuclear EMP weapons. You know, because they're getting smaller and more effective and more powerful, so you can put them into things like cruise missiles and drones and now hypersonic warheads, and that means that. The marriage of these things, of non-nuclear EMP weapons with cruise missiles, drones, or hypersonic warheads, these delivery means, greatly increases the kind of threat that can be posed by them. Because before they were heavier and you had, more cumbersome and more difficult to put into these kinds of delivery vehicles. So that's the technological revolution that's happening. But obviously, Mr. Peck has been influenced by the anti-nuclear crowd in his assessment of why this is technologically important. In his article, the reason that non-nuclear EMP weapons may be a technological revolution is that they're not nuclear. You know, because who can imagine using a nuclear weapon to do an EMP attack? You know, his article just assumes that everybody shares the view of the American anti-nuclear left, that it is just unthinkable to use a nuclear weapon for anything, including EMP. And therefore, that's what makes them a revolution, you know? You know, obviously the man is not well read in Russian or Chinese or North Korean or Iranian doctrine or even the threats that they routinely make to us. You know, this assumption that, oh, nobody would use nuclear weapons, you know? Well, why are they building these nuclear weapons? And why is the whole world, including relatively small nations too, by the way, I mean, everybody, most of the nations of the world, well, I shouldn't say most of them, okay, but those who have competent militaries, because they recognize that nuclear EMP is a potentially decisive weapon, and they don't have nuclear programs. Right. You know, even Switzerland, for example, has got non-nuclear EMP weapons or is developing them. Why would they be spending money on something that has capabilities that are overblown or exaggerated? You know, most of these countries can't afford to waste their resources on something that would be dubious. You know, obviously they're making these investments because they appreciate the technological breakthrough that these things represent and the potentially decisive utility of non-nuclear EMP weapons in warfare.
Well, it's a deterrent. But, it's like the perfect deterrent because it's non-nuclear. It would devastate an enemy. It doesn't kill people at first.
Right, right.
But it's not a radiation generator. You're not going to have a Hiroshima or a Nagasaki, you know, remains after a nuclear detonation. And for countries that want low cost, not expensive. Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have a Hiroshima or Nagasaki after a nuclear EMP attack either. You know, only get the nuclear weapon only generates EMP, and it too does not kill people. You know, but the point is that most countries don't have nuclear weapons. And most countries, it's way beyond their technological capability to deliver nuclear weapons. But here is the ability, you know, to get an EMP weapon that's non-nuclear, mm-hmm. and it is within the grasp of even terrorist organizations. I mean, I did an experiment. The House Armed Services Committee, when I was on their staff, on their professional staff, we did an experiment when we had the year before 9/11, under the Mr. Jim Saxton, who was the chairman of the terrorism subcommittee. And Mr. Saxton was really interested in non-nuclear EMP weapons. And so we did an experiment to see, well, could terrorists build one of these things? And we got together a little bit of money and hired a guy who had a degree in electrical engineering, gave him some graduate students to serve as a team. And the requirement was, you know, with the modest resources we gave him and using parts only purchased commercially, like from Radio Shack, you know, that would be available to anybody, and using design information that was available on the Internet or design information that he could come up with out of his brain, you know, could they in a year build a non-nuclear EMP weapon? Not only did they do it, but they built two non-nuclear EMP weapons, this little team. And they were very effective. It was the only congressional hearing I know of where we helicoptered the committee members out to Aberdeen Proving Grounds, the U.S. Army Proving Grounds at Aberdeen. And, you know, because they have a chamber there where you can use to demonstrate EMP weapons, it'll contain the pulse so that you don't inadvertently make an airliner crash or something like that, you know. We actually had brought in reporters so they could see it. I mean, this was back in the year 2000, 20 years ago, you know. And people like Michael Peck still don't know, despite all our efforts, you know, to try to educate people about this. It's just very I'll give my apologies here to Michael Peck though, because maybe most people would say I'm. Or some people in journalism would probably say, oh, look, Pry, you know, that was a good article. You know, he gave you 95% of what you he quoted you at great length and gave you 95% of what you would like. You know, he only departed from your assessment of these matters and a few points, you know, that appear here and there. And on the whole, you know, given the way journalists usually treat EMP, you know, it was a good article. I put it in the category of being a good article, given the way most journalists treat EMP. But
so
still,
a pretty low standard, though, you're judging him by.
Exactly. There's a double standard. There's a double standard here.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
When it comes to a threat like EMP that is empirically demonstrated, it's not a theoretical threat, you know, it's much better established than climate change or even the more, the worst case scenarios for cyber warfare, you know? And yet it's true. It's just because, you know, there are some opinions out there by non-expert left-wing anti-nuclear idiots, you know, that affects the opinion of almost every journalist, you know?
Yeah.
And it's probably Google too, because when people, you know, a defense guy, you know, who hasn't heard about EMP or doesn't know much about it, you know, when he goes into the search engines to bring up EMP, you know, the first things they always bring up are the non-expert left-wing opinions. And that's, and that probably accounts for, you know, why there's still so much disinformation out there. It manages to creep its way into, but I do have to give Michael Peck credit for the fact that even he, you know, he, while he included the naysayers in there, you know, I think the naysayers are being pushed out more and more simply by the fact, because even, you know, if you're a reasonably intelligent reporter and you say, well, these guys claim this is overblown, but look at this, the Chinese are working on it, the United States has got this thing called CHAMP. You know, the Israelis have got it. The Iranians are working on it. The Russians, the Chinese, all these other countries that you can find in Google, you know, are working on it. You've got to be a reasonable person has got to be more and more skeptical. And I think he perhaps was, but still, it's still he had to put in that little, well, some people think it's overblown thing. But anyway, perhaps enough on that.
This is
topic.
Funny.
Sure. Oh, go on. Go ahead.
Oh, no. You're inspired today. I'm really enjoying this. So this is fun. So look up a couple of things while you're chatting real quickly. And you said, you said, if you look up EMP, this is what you find. So, of course, I looked up EMP, and this is the first article that I found on EMP from Common Sense Home. It says, Electromagnetic Pulse, EMP, What You Need to Know, August 20th, 2021. So this is pretty recent. The two most likely reasons for an EMP are a nuclear explosion or solar flare. See, it happens naturally, so it's okay, right? This post discusses the damage an EMP may cause and actions you can take to prevent or manage the results of an EMP. Dr. Brad, do you manage the results of an EMP? Sorry.
Well,
it just sounds a little...
Yes. You know, there's no reason for people not to be prepared for an EMP.
Oh, okay.
The preparations are the same that you would make for a hurricane, except for a situation that is much longer lasting, where you might be without power, you know, maybe forever, all right? You know, having food, water stored away, you know, having a medicine kit and know how to use it. You know, most people, when they think about EMP preparedness, they think about, well, how do I harden the electronics in my home? You know, you can harden electronics in your home or in your car, but that shouldn't be the top priority. You know, the top priority is water is the number one priority, because immediately there isn't going to be any running water. You know, so there are common things, and you can live with, if you're prepared to live without electricity, you can live without electricity. The problem is people aren't prepared for anything. Most of our population isn't prepared for anything anymore. And so when you lose the electricity and then you lose the water and then the food supply runs out, you know, people are going to be in huge trouble. You know, in fact, they will die, you know, so you can prepare for an EMP or a cyber attack, or even a nuclear conflict, you know, and I think those things are useful, you know, I think they're more than useful. I am a big supporter of the whole so-called prepper or survivalist movement you know, mm-hmm. which unfortunately is derided as preppers and survivalists now. And it's we've gone through a cultural shift in just a generation or two, because in my father's generation, you know, the great mm-hmm. generation that survived the Great Depression and lived through World War II, and then, you know, was prepared for anything, prepared with big during the Cold War years, they hadn't heard the word survivalist hadn't been invented yet, but everybody yeah. from that generation, Democrat, Republican, was basically a survivalist that seen government fail in peace during the Great Depression and in war during World War II. They knew the government couldn't be trusted to take care of their family, and it was a matter of pride that they didn't want the government to take care of their family. They wanted yep. to take care of their own family. And, you know, my father taught us to hunt and fish, you know, not just for mainly for recreation, but because that's what he did when he was a kid to help feed his family during the Great Depression, you know, yeah. hunting woodchucks and catching fish out of the Mohawk River. You know, people had to do that. You know, they had to collect coal along the that fell off of railroad cars along the railroad tracks and things like that, so they would have fuel. And the modern attitude is, well, I don't want to live in fear, you know. And so people are, it seems, to be afraid to become a survivalist because they think that means living in fear. My parents were very happy people precisely because they were ready for anything. And they knew they didn't have to be rescued. They wouldn't have to depend on – the idea of depending on government or taking charity to that generation was so yeah. repugnant, you know, that the possibility of having to do that was far more repugnant to them than almost anything else. And they I think that they felt understood in their bones that as soon as you had to depend on anyone else other than yourself or your own family, you were giving up your freedom. And so I think that that kind of personality type that believes in rugged individualism and self-sufficiency, that's mm-hmm. what the Constitution was written for. There was a yeah. certain kind of American character. You know, when we talk about the uniqueness of America, I think that's it. It was that kind of personality type, that kind of character that was jealous of their freedom, suspicious of government. They didn't want government to take care of them. They didn't want to take handouts from anybody, you know, maximize their personal freedom and personal choices in life and not be dependent on anybody. And that's who the Constitution was written for. You know, a nation of farmers and small shopkeepers, a nation of hunters and fishermen, you know, and, mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that just seems to have gotten away. You know, now, you know, the politically correct view on television and elsewhere is that survivalist people should be mocked, and don't worry, you know, have faith in the Department of Homeland Security and in big mm-hmm. government. You know, there's some guy with thick glasses who's thought about all of this stuff, including EMP, and he'll be there to rescue you in 72 hours. In fact, that's even on the Department of Homeland Security official website. You know, be prepared to survive for 72 hours. You know, that's how long it'll take for government to come to the rescue.
Oh, listen, I was under Hurricane Sally. It took a week to get my power back after Hurricane Sally.
How can anybody believe that when we've had hurricanes, which aren't anything as catastrophic as an EMP would be, for example, you know, yeah. the blacks out the national power grid, possibly forever, you know, mm-hmm. and Brit takes down all the other critical infrastructures. Government isn't even competent to rescue people from hurricanes, you know, which happen all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people quickly find themselves on their own in desperate circumstances and they have to do desperate things because they're not prepared. You know,
see, I was, though. I had water. I had food. I got canned goods, you know. And actually, you know, my gallons of stuff. And what a lot of people do, they fill up a bathtub for the non-drinkable stuff, you know. But so you have water. Those people don't realize that those water containers, you know, like those gallon jugs or 2 gallon or whatever, they're good for 2 years when they're sealed. So what I do is I buy a bunch of water before hurricane season. And then at the end of hurricane season, drink it because it's only like, you know, 6 months into its normal time. And then, of course, the next season, I buy a bunch more. And this is what I'll do is I'll eat my earthquake food or hurricane food. I used to call it earthquake food because I lived in San Francisco and I was in the 89 earthquake. And we did the same thing. We had food. We had cans. We had water. We, you know, we had batteries. We knew what to do. And when everything went out, I mean, everything went out for a long time in San Francisco. I think it was about a week once again. No electricities, no phones because we didn't have cell phones then. All that stuff was out. And we did fine. You know, we had the first night we had a big barbecue on our corner, our corner grocery store brought out the charcoal. We brought all our meat that was going to be gone by the next day because the refrigerators were out. And we had a big barbecue. We had a great time. Everybody brought food. We all shared our food with everybody else. It was fascinating. But I have the distinction of being in the 1978, you know, blizzard, New England, that horrible northeaster blizzard. So the blizzard, I was in the blizzard of 78, I was in the earthquake of 89, and I was here for Hurricane Sally. And so I joke with my friends, I said, you know, I should move next to a volcano next, just to see what happens. But, you know, if you're prepared, but it's interesting that some of the most beautiful places, some of the most fertile soil is under volcanoes. You know, so we do things, the whole of San Francisco sits right on the San Andreas Fault. But people live there, 9 million of them, in fact. You know, so we live in places that we don't want to avoid because it's there. And the same thing I feel with EMP. In that it exists, it's here, you know, it's preventable if we do the stuff right. But if we do have one, there are ways that we can deal with it as things are being, you know, reinstituted. That was an interesting article that I pulled up, the first one. I'm going to send it to you, and I'll take a look at it after the show. Just to digress slightly, Forbes magazine is not owned by the Forbes family anymore. It's owned by this thing called Whale Investment Marketing. It's a Hong Kong company. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah. No, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I'll send you this article too. Oh, yeah, Whale Media Investments. Now they say it's Hong Kong,
Whale
but could
Media.
That be could that be controlled by Communist China now? We don't
know.
Well,
it could be. It could be. One of the other Forbes has been pretty good on EMP though. This isn't the only article that's been published.
Yeah.
There have been several other articles published this year on EMP, and they've all of
well,
them.
Well, is this a warning?
All of them have been good.
Yeah, but you said China had published a non-classified version of their EMP nuclear results. Why would they do that?
Well, it was on the non-nuclear EMP weapons. And
why would they do that?
It in the IEEE proceedings. Oh, you know, that because IEEE is red by electrical engineers all over the world. And if you're smart, and the Chinese are very smart about this, and we're developing non-nuclear EMP weapons,
okay,
and there may be technical areas where your own research has a shortfall and you want to fill in the blanks,
mm-hmm,
you know, you could write an article in such a way that doesn't disclose, you know, your own advanced technologies, you know, that
okay
might be ahead of everybody else. But say, oh, we haven't been able to solve this problem or that problem or whatever. And so you're basically getting advice from all electrical engineers all over the world to help you advance your non-nuclear EMP program. And that's why they would do it. And it's not the only thing that they do. I mean, it's this, you know, you'll find Chinese academics supposedly, okay,
mm-hmm,
usually posturing. They don't advertise, well, you know, this institute is a subsidiary of the People's Liberation Army, you know. You know,
yeah,
they postulate as, you know, some medical center if it's a biological issue or an electronics research institute, you know,
mm-hmm,
that makes it look like it's okay, you know, to be dealing with these people. But they're all tied in to the People's Liberation Army in one way or the other. And so in some respects, they've been smarter than the Russians about being able to exploit. Or maybe that's giving them too much credit. It's just that we've been trained to think of the Chinese, you know, during the Cold War, they were our allies. And so for many decades, we haven't seen China as a threat. Well,
yeah,
they were. I mean, ever since the Nixon administration, you know, and you know, whereas we've always known the Russians have been a threat and not to be trusted, and they haven't even tried.
Well, they were our allies too. They were our allies in World War II, and we fought China and Korea. So this ally adversary seems to bounce back and forth rather frequently with different countries.
Yeah, it became it was a big deal after the Ussuri River crisis in 1969, though, because you know, Moscow, that was the border crisis between Russia and China. And they actually were shooting at each other. A war was about to break out over the boundaries in Siberia near the Ussuri River. And Kosygin, who was the prime minister at the time, made an inquiry of the Nixon administration about what would be the U.S. position if they nuked China. And
Well, wait. stop the presses. I want to find out more about this. If you have a couple minutes, I know you want to get to something else, but we got the rest of the hour. How do you spell Asuri? I want to look this up. This is fascinating.
U-S-S-U-R-I, Asuri River. I actually have to go. I only had a half hour today.
Okay, that's fine.
I could spend on this, but I'm sure you'll have no difficulty finding that. But yes, that was and that was the thing that actually opened the door up a lot in America, in the West. Mm-hmm. And the media treatment of this, it's often treated as the brainchild of Henry Kissinger, you know, and that Nixon, agreed to it, but there was this big obvious thing where the Soviet Union, was seriously thinking about nuking China, and the United Front, you know, because up to that point we had thought of the communist bloc, Russia and China, as being monolithic, and
right.
But suddenly when this inquiry came in, it became obvious, or at least it seemed obvious to Nixon and Kissinger, hey, here's an opportunity for us to split China off from Russia.
Well,
and
that's what I want to do. That's my goal.
Right, and they did, and they did good service for us during the Cold War. I mean, they were holding down 60 Soviet armored and infantry divisions all through the Cold War that could have been deployed against opposite NATO Europe, you know.
Wow.
A lot of the Chinese work, one of the reasons the Chinese focused on intermediate range ballistic missiles and medium range ballistic missiles and not intercontinental ballistic missiles throughout most of the Cold War is because they were far more afraid of Russia than they were of the United States. You know, we had they helped us in Afghanistan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the West, when it came to scientific and biological, any things that were related to defense, we sort of lowered our guard, with the Chinese, which was a big mistake. You know, that's one of the reasons they've been able to penetrate our universities and it's not necessarily that they're more clever than the Russians were, just that we always understood that Moscow was an enemy, you know. We only had the brief thaw in relations under Yeltsin, but pretty much it's been, you know, the Cold War never really went away with Russia. But I thank you so much for letting me, expound here.
Well, this is great. Are you kidding? Give it to your friends and colleagues and let them hear your rant. But my closing thing is, if you can get Michael Peck, this is a long shot, I know, but if you're still in communication, I'd love if you could invite him onto the show with you maybe next Monday. We can actually talk about defense journalism.
The last thing I need is another journalist who hates me.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, all right. This is all right. No problem.
You know. So
forget that
right,
idea.
I, you know. Okay. Well, thank you, my friend. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to hold forth here for a little over half an hour.
Okay. Do you feel better?
And yes, I do. Definitely.
Well, good.
You know, I've been seeing over it all over the weekend. So yes, the Greg Penglis therapy half hour in this case works for me. But sorry to have to cut it off. Well,
okay.
I guess this isn't early. We're supposed to go a half hour, but in this case,
don't worry about that. I keep the whole hour for you. Mondays, you got the whole hour, unless we both run out of steam or something like that, and we said everything we want to say. In which case, I always have other stuff to talk about. But no, that's fine. I set this hour aside. I'm not going to schedule a guest during this hour because it's so much fun to have you on, and I appreciate every time. Even though I know we get bogged down, I think for some people in too many technical details. But if you take the time to start learning those technical details, it gets really fascinating. And so this is something that we do need to know about. And I just love having you on. I really do. It's such a pleasure every Monday. So have a good week, and we'll do it again next Monday.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I just have an appointment that I've got to keep, and I've got to get back on the road here.
Yeah, get back on the road.
Well,
appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
You can listen to the rest of the show if you put your cell phone, put the browser on, and put the Action Radio on your browser. You can plug it into your car whenever you're going. If you want to pick up a podcast, you can listen to yourself. It's kind of fun.
Okay, sounds good. Will do.
Thank you, sir. All right, take care.
Thank you, Greg. Bye-bye.
All right, bye now. He was inspired today. That was great. For those of you that regular listeners to Dr. Peter Pryor on our national security time that we do have him on, again, we do. I know there's a lot of detail, there's a lot of technical things, and I know there's an audience for it, and I think a lot of people sometimes wonder why I go into such details because you know, if you want to take the time, if you want to go back over it, if you want to learn about the things that are going on in ways that you're just not going to find out about. I mean, I had a ton of questions for him. Something I've been thinking about, too, if anybody wants to join me on this as we talk about national security. I've got those two articles I just went over, one who owns Forbes magazine and the other about EMP. I might get into those now. I just pulled those up while Dr. Pryor was talking, so I didn't want to, you know, focus on them while I'm rather listen to him because, you know, he's my guest. Actually, he's on regularly every Monday. But it's just once something's been bugging me. For a while. And again, if anybody wants to call in, 215-383-3832. And the question concerns Milley, General Milquetoast. General Milquetoast took it upon himself to call China, to call his counterpart in China. I mean, how he knows his counterpart in China, I find fascinating. I mean, I imagine they have files on everybody. But to be able to pick up the phone and go, hey, General Li, dude, oh, how's breakfast in China? It's midnight here or something like that. But, you know, he told him that if if Trump's going to declare war on China, that he's going to tell him in advance. Now, as I try and think like an intelligence person, I think to myself, that's kind of brilliant in a way if Trump knew about it, because that's a way to scare China. You know, back in the Nixon Kissinger days that Dr. Pryor was just referring to, I'm going to look up the Missouri River crisis. I'm kind of curious now, because people forget that Russia and China were enemies. There was one of the Bond movies. And I've forgotten which one it was, but it's like it was early in the space program. And it's one of the Sean Connery ones. And, you know, it's not Russia with Love. It's not that. It's not Thunderball. That's when they capture the nukes. It's one of those ones. Whatever one it is, both the Americans and the Russians launch a space capsule, and they have like two astronauts. And then this capsule from Spectre comes up and basically swallows them and brings them back and captures them, right? And it's fascinating that the whole point of this was to get a nuclear war going in the United States and China and Russia. And I forgot exactly how it was working, but China thought Russia did it. Russia thought the United States did it. The United States thought China did it. Nobody trusted anybody. And the whole idea was to get a huge nuclear war, and Spectre would emerge victorious and run the world. Usual plot, right? And everybody wants to run the world, right? So, but it was interesting that people forget how much animosity and you know, how much of a border crisis there can be between China and Russia. You know, and when Dr. Pryor mentioned 60, what do they call them? Just not battalions. What's the word I'm trying to think of? Divisions. There we go. 60 divisions, armored divisions that China was keeping, that Russia had to put on the Chinese-Russian border, 60 divisions of armored infantry. That's tanks, you know, that's probably helicopters, that's millions of men, you know, along the Chinese. And, of course, the Chinese probably had the same 60 divisions themselves along their border. Well, we only had 20 divisions in World War II. Okay, so when we, you know, set our troops to defeat Nazi Germany, to defeat Hitler, it was about 20 divisions. The Russians at that time had 120 divisions. And division's huge. It's like, you know, it's not as big as an army. I don't know how many divisions, probably like four divisions to an army or something like that. Anyway, the 6th Army, the 1st Army, you know, 8th Army, that kind of stuff. Anyway, so 20 divisions was a lot of people that we had over there in Europe in World War II. And to the fact that 60 Russian divisions were sitting on the border with China doing nothing, but just were there just in case, that's a staggering amount of people. That's three times our force in World War II sitting there waiting for an attack. That to me is incredible. So the animosity between China and Russia, the competition between China and Russia, you know, has me believing that as much as China and Russia publicly cooperate, secretly they're developing missiles and weapons against each other. Now, the question I didn't get to ask Dr. Pryor was on a hypersonic missile. Hypersonic is hyperspeed. I mean, it's fast. It's lightning fast. I mean, this thing is incredibly fast. So the question is, why would you need to have a non-nuclear weapon on a hypersonic missile, which is like, you know, as supersonic is to regular airplanes, hypersonic is to supersonic. I mean, it's really fast. Why would you need that? If it's a, you know, why not a cruise missile? It just kind of lopes along 600 miles an hour, you know, 5 feet off the ocean. Dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum. You know, just a little, you know, probably maybe because it can be shot down because it takes a while to get there. But I guess that's the thing. So EMP pulse, very interesting. We don't talk enough about it. And so I got a couple things that I find interesting. I also find it interesting that Forbes is owned by a Chinese conglomerate now. You know, out of Hong Kong, which pretty much means out of communist China right now. So we have Michael Peck, you know, he talks about the business stuff. It's very interesting to see. So he's got here Forbes. Here's a thing. I found this. Market Realists is the SPACS, SPACS, became Wall Street Money Tree. That's a different article. Oh, here we go. Who owns Forbes magazine and does it have ties to China? Catherine Underwood, January 14th, 2021. So this is earlier this year. Who owns Forbes magazine? Forbes magazine covers news in the finance industry, investing, marketing, and other topics that are relevant to the business world. In 1982, the series of Forbes 400, which features the wealthiest 400 Americans each year. Oh boy, not there yet, working on it. All right. Business leaders like Warren Buffett and Elon Musk have been near the top of the list for years. Oh, good for them. A Hong Kong-based group of investors holds the majority stake in Forbes Media Company. Oh, that's interesting. Steve Forbes is the editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine. As of spring 2020, the magazine's audience was 5.8 million readers. In November 2020, the magazine's website had 69 million monthly U.S. visitors, and that's according to Forbes. Okay. Hey, Action Radio, we're going to be there soon. Share the show. We'll get there. And so it's interesting. It says, now a household name, Forbes was the first major American business magazine founded in 1917 by Bertie Charles Forbes. Oh, I'm sure they have a fun established family. The Forbes family. Remember Malcolm Forbes? Malcolm Forbes was a kick. He was He's a rodeo guy. You know, he used to ride in rodeos in his, like, 60s or maybe even early 70s. He was the commerce secretary for a while under Reagan, I believe. And Malcolm Forbes died in a rodeo accident. I mean, a horse fell on him. You know, he was that kind of guy. He was out there still doing horse stuff, you know, in his more senior years. And Malcolm Forbes was a daredevil. He was great. He was an entrepreneur. He was a risk taker. He was what America is. And I was thinking when Dr. Pry was talking that, you know, if the Constitution is written for individuals, you know, if you don't have individuals, you don't have a country. You don't have a Constitution. And the whole point of the left is to breed out the individuals and replace them with the group. Okay, so you belong to the group. You belong to your racial group. You belong to your ethnic group. You belong to your political group. And so America cannot survive unless we are individuals. I mean, that's it. And the whole point, I mean, if there are no individuals, there's nobody exercising individual rights. You know, so what's the point? Anyway, Forbes magazine, billionaires, many people know Forbes for its coverage of categories like billionaires, 30 under 30, Forbes 400, and self-made women. Well, that's interesting. Then they go a little more propaganda. Yeah, the Forbes family still owns a significant stake in Forbes Media, along with Integrated Whale Media Investments. I tried looking them up, didn't get anything, maybe because I didn't use the word integrated. Let's look up Integrated Whale Media Investments. This is a cute name, Integrated Whale Media Investments. Let's copy that. Let me pull up a new window. I know it's live radio, but, you know, I'm here on my own. So Gene had to leave us this hour, but that's okay. This is why I love having Gene for a producer to do stuff while I'm doing, you know, the show. And let's see what Integrated Whale Media Investments is. Integrated Whale Media Investments. Slow down, Greg. Integrated Whale Media Investments company profile. Oh, this is from Bloomberg. Well, there's a reliable source. Let's see what Bloomberg, you know, leftist Bloomberg says about, you know, Hong Kong media investment. Where's the article? Ad. Are they going to let me see it? A lot of ads. Oh, I guess I have to subscribe to Bloomberg before they let me see it. That's not fun. Oh, here we go. This is even better. Tricentennial U.S. Communist China-owned Integrated Whale Media Investments start their purge. Okay. I'm going to say this to Dr. Bry. This is January 11th. Forbes says it's targeting Trump staffers and their future employees by Michael Dorstewitz, D-O-R-S-T-E-W-I-T-Z. This is, it says, media... PM Media, what's PM Media? I don't know what that is. PM Media on the left aren't satisfied with merely controlling the White House and both chambers of commerce in less than 2 weeks. They want revenge. They also want to punish anyone who worked in the Trump administration and, to a lesser extent, the 45th president's supporters. On Thursday, what was the most recent and possibly the most egregious example, Randall Lane, that's R-A-N-D-A-L-L-L-A-N-E, Randall Lane, Forbes' chief content officer. Officer? Boy, that sounds right out of communist China, doesn't it? Content officer. How about what we used to call an editor? This is what we used to call an editor, right? Chief content officer announced that Forbes Media was, quote, holding those who lied for Trump accountable in what he called a truth reckoning. Lane claimed that his media group was taking this unprecedented action in response to the mob attack on Capitol Hill late Wednesday afternoon. That'd be January 6th. This was written January 10th. So this is 4 days after the January 6th Democrat GOP deep state insurrection to make it look like Trump supporters, right? Excuse me. Lane claimed that he was making... Oh, here we go. Which resulted in two deaths, a Capitol Hill police officer and a female U.S. Air Force veteran who was demonstrating that day. Well, those deaths were something very interesting. What they're talking about is Ashley Babbitt, who was assassinated by Michael J. Byrd, Lieutenant Michael J. Byrd of the Capitol Hill Police. And the Capitol officer is Brian Sicknick, who they said was killed with a fire extinguisher, who I believe was killed by a COVID shot because he had two strokes. Normally healthy man, gets a massive blood clots and gets two strokes, you know, January 6th, which would have been probably, you know, 2 weeks to a month after he got a COVID shot, because all of Capitol Hill got COVID shots in December of 2020. Do the math. Lane, back to the article, Lane alleged that the president's lies upon lies, repeated, frequent, and fervently, provided the kindlings. Okay, all right. Where's the Chinese involvement? It's in the White House, the former press secretary, Sean Spicer, Kelly McEnany, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I pulled this article up during the show. This is why I'm sort of having to go over it now. Where's the China part? Were you saving it for the bottom? Oh, here we go. Steve Forbes has been a strong supporter of Trump's, endorsing him both in 2016 and 2020. Steve Forbes, by the way, I met him. I've told the story before. It's kind of funny. I saw his bus in, this is back when I was living in the East Bay of San Francisco, and he was going to a big media outlet, probably, I'm sure, for an interview. I see his bus. I cut off his bus. I mean, I shouldn't have done this. I drive right in front of his bus and pull over, jump out of my car and start waving. I want to meet Steve Forbes. I want to meet Steve Forbes. I had never met a presidential candidate before, let alone the president, right? I never met one. So I jump out of my car, you know, flag down this bus, and this guy comes out that looks like a Secret Service guy or somebody, you know, big and powerful with guns everywhere. He says, what the hell do you want? I said, I want to shake Steve Forbes' hand. I've never met a billionaire before. I want to meet a billionaire. I want to meet a presidential candidate. Is that okay? And he's looking at me like, what kind of idiot is this person? Anybody acting as goofy as I was had to be harmless. All right. So they go inside, they talk to me, they see me out there pacing around. Wow, I'm going to meet Steve Forbes. And he comes down. And I chatted with him briefly for about a minute, shook his hand, and back he went into the bus. But what was fascinating is not what he said, but the fact that man had the softest hands of any man ever shaken hands with. It's fascinating. This guy's never touched a broom in his life. He's never done hard work. He's never carried bricks. He's never hauled plaster. You know, he's never cut down trees. He's never swung an axe or a hammer. Yeah, this guy had like girl hands. And it was fascinating and I didn't want to squeeze too hard because, you know, he's a billionaire and he's got, you know, he's not a real strong guy. It's just really interesting. Billionaires apparently don't do physical work, which is kind of stupid. Someone tells me if I shook Trump's hand, you know, he gets his exercise in, and hopefully I'll have that opportunity one day. But Steve Forbes, don't shake his hand too hard. I'm sorry. He's got girl hands. But that I just found fascinating so there's your billionaire. That told me more about billionaires than probably I needed to know, but it was a fascinating insight into the things that people have when they grow up with money, you know. And guys, you know, get out there and do some physical labor. You'll feel better and you'll understand how the rest of us have had to do it. I've done my share. All right, so back to this. So Steve Forbes strongly endorsed Trump. The irony is explained by the fact Steve and the Forbes family no longer own Forbes, the media company. Well, they should call it something else, you know, Chinese Communist Daily or something like that. At least give it a proper name, right? So they say, in fact, Forbes Media was sold 6 years ago to Integrated Whale Media Investments, oh my, which is based in Hong Kong and which has since become the territory of mainland communist China. So there you go. So you want to believe Forbes magazine? Fine, go ahead. But trust me that now it says, this market research person says that Integrated Whale Media Investments, based in Hong Kong, which I'm sure was a for-profit Western-style corporation, is now in the territory of communist China, so guess who owns them now? It said Forbes wasn't the first to threaten future employers of Trump White House staffers. See, the Chinese hate Trump. They hate Donald Trump because he put all kinds of tariffs on them. He made them live up to what they actually said. He did all the things that Biden's not doing, because Biden's doing everything the opposite of Trump, and that's why Biden sucks. And he's not even a good, you know, presidential thief. You know, if you're going to steal the White House, at least they should have stole it for someone that could do the job. They didn't even do that. Anyway, I find that quite fascinating. I think I'll keep that article. Well, we've only got 7 minutes left. If you want to get into the conversation, now's the time. All right, let's get back to this other thing here. That's Forbes. I don't need that one anymore. The other one I found is much more interesting. So let's talk about EMP. So Dr. Pry challenged us. If you look in the first, and you put EMP in the computer, what comes out of the search engine? Well, I found a pretty good article, actually. Common Sense Home. And it says, using sound judgment to be more self-reliant. Oh, so this is probably, you know, these guys are almost preppers. Sharing is caring. There we go. So they talk about EMP. Two most likely EMP are nuclear explosion or a solar flare. And this discusses the damage that EMP may cause. EMP is an electromagnetic pulse. It's an electromagnetic wave that goes through everything electronic and destroys the circuits. It destroys the ability of computers and electronic devices to function. Now, it's electric, you don't get it. It's in the air. I mean, the machines feel it, but people don't. because we're electric ourselves. I mean, people have an electric charge. You didn't know that. But well, how do you think electric eels do what they do? They just have a much stronger electric charge than we do. But all living things, I think, have some kind of, even plants, I think, have some kind of electric charge in them. That's what keeps us going. Anyway, so it says, what's an EMP? It's a wave of electromagnetic radiation. It is like sunshine or a bright flash, but on a different frequency. Oh, that's interesting. All right, because obviously the natural frequencies are accounted for. And it causes other things, too, like skin cancer, things like that. Anyway, but also plants going, too, because, you know, without sun, there's no photosynthesis. So radiation is not a bad thing. It's just the wrong kind of radiation and too much of it. That's a bad thing. Article says the electrons from an EMP rains down upon the planet. Those electrons interact with power lines, metal, conductive materials, and electronics and causes power spikes. A large EMP could knock out power or damage or destroy electronic equipment. Most EMPs do not directly hurt people, although they may cause harm when produced in extreme conditions such as munitions explosions, which is what Dr. Pry was talking about. Okay, so an EMP can be caused by many things, and they say the two most likely are a nuclear explosion or a solar flare, which actually have a fair amount in common. Both have a lot of radiation, solar radiation and nuclear radiation. Okay, so they say the nuclear explosion is hotter than so many suns. And this threat, they say, is a high-altitude EMP. It's got a fast pulse and a slow pulse. The fast pulse has long-line and short-line electrical and electronic systems damage, and the slow pulse systems, including electric power grid, terrestrial, and undersea communications lines and pipelines. Undersea communications? Now, are cables under the ocean that are going to get affected by the EMP? I did not. That's fascinating. Anyway, says, what could an EMP damage? Depending on the power of the explosion or a solar flare, an EMP could disable, damage, or destroy TVs, radios, and other broadcast equipment, power grid, transformers, and substations. Well, that's where your power goes out. Telephones, landlines, and smartphones. Okay, so they go out too. Vehicle and aircraft control systems. Oh, yeah, they're going to be flying blind up there until they find a way to land. So head for visual conditions, guys, and put down. That's where you are when this happens, right? Because all the aircraft systems lead out to the radios, the instruments, they're going to fly by instinct. Hopefully they're not in the clouds. Actually, there is a way to fly on instruments without power. You have to know how to do it. We have a wonderful instrument called the needle and ball. It's a gyro instrument. And hopefully the gyros keep going. I don't know if they're electrically powered in their system, but an airplane, they're vacuum powered. So even if you lose your electrical system and you lose your attitude indicator, you still have a turn and bank. And you can actually let down through the clouds using only your turn and bank indicator. And the way you do it is you set up a descent in visual conditions. I don't know why I'm telling you all this, but it's just, you know, I'm just rambling. You set up a descent, okay? So you reduce power and trim your airplane for a descent, perfectly straight line. So you line up on a compass heading, which hopefully will be still working too, but if it's a gyro compass, it won't. So look for a decent compass heading. You know it's going to take you to, space underneath between the clouds and the ground. Otherwise, you're screwed, right? And you descend and you trim it up for descent. And all you do with the turn and bank indicator is you keep your wings level and keep the ball centered. Okay. Don't worry about course so much. It's going to deviate a little bit anyway. But if you keep the wings level, you're not going to get disoriented in the clouds. Okay. Because once you're in the clouds, you don't know what's up or down. And if you only have that one instrument, you keep your wings level. You don't bank at all, or you immediately correct the banks and you're going to be in pretty good shape. With the rudder, you keep the ball in the center. And the ball is something that works off centrifugal force. If you don't use your rudder properly, it's going to slip to the inside or skid to the outside. So as you're descending down with your wings level, keep that ball centered, the plane will be balanced and you're not going to screw up or unbalance or stall or do weird things. And that's how with that one instrument, you can get through the clouds. So if you have an EMP, the airlines, they should be training this, but I don't know if the younger pilots are training that. I trained my pilots in it when I was a flight instructor. You know, but that was me. You know, and other instructors did too. I'm not the only one, but the good instructors, I believe, would train for everything. And the bad instructors just get you through the FAA, you know, practical tests and don't really tell you how to fly. Okay, so what's the difference between a solar and a nuclear EMP? We've got about 2 minutes left. I might as well finish up with this. A nuclear EMP is a more energetic and has a shorter burst. A solar flare EMP may also be referred to as a coronal mass ejection. I don't know what something about that sounds bad. Don't have a mass ejection, folks, all right? Anyway, talking about I just didn't say corona. Now, we have a coronavirus, which is on the outside of the virus cell, and we have a corona for the sun, which is the radiation, the flares and things that you see outside the actual shadow. So when you have a solar eclipse, when the earth goes, the shadow of the earth goes in front of the sun, or the moon goes in front of the sun, I guess it's the moon, goes in front of the sun, and the moon blocks the sun, it doesn't block out the corona. In other words, the stuff outside the shadow created by the moon. All these things called coronas. It's interesting. Corona beer, too. Yeah, grab a line. All right. So an EMP can be also referred to as the chromatic ejection, or CME, or a geomagnetic storm. Solar flares vary wildly in intensity, from simply causing bright northern lights, oh yeah, I got to see that one day, to potentially destroying some or all of the power grid. Small EMPs may cause power grid blackouts. Solar flares can last much longer than their EMPs. Well, yeah, because solar, there's my 90-second warning. Solar flares start at the sun, and of course, by the time they get to Earth, 93 million miles later, yeah, they're going to, you know, they're going to dissipate a little bit, and they're going to stretch out a bit. Anyway, proliferation of nuclear weapons says the likelihood of a nuclear EMP increases. A nuclear EMP requires a nuclear weapon delivered by a rocket, high-flying aircraft, or ICBM, that is intercontinental ballistic missile. The nuke is detonated high in the air, referred to as an air burst or atmospheric burst, to create the EMP. In the worst case, detonated in the upper atmosphere approximately 20 miles up, a large 1 kiloton to 2 kiloton nuclear electromagnetic pulse like this would be very serious. This is a nation or nation state or rogue state, such as North Korea or Iran, or if they give it to the Taliban, are the most likely cause of an atmospheric nuclear burst EMP. There are other ways to create directed EMPs, but we're bringing them in this post. Yeah, because, you know, before the Taliban happened and we lost the war, we surrendered. That's the other thing, too. Nobody talks about the surrender. Why don't we talk about Biden's surrender? Okay, so Biden surrendered to the Taliban. I mean, he did. He gave them all the weapons. He pulled out 100,000 Afghanis. He surrendered to Obama, too. But this should be labeled Biden's surrender. And I think, or, you know, because it's his surrender. The military didn't surrender. They were all set to fight. He did. Anyway, okay, about 10 seconds left. It's been a really interesting show. There's a lot of material here. There's a lot of information that we covered, and I'll be putting some show notes together soon so you can find your way around. People should use the timeline. When you start the episode of a podcast, okay, you go to the top and the pink line appears. That's your timeline. That's what allows you to click anywhere in the show. So you don't have to listen to the whole show all at once. You can click anywhere in the timeline. You can repeat stuff. You can not hear stuff. You can do whatever you want. Anyway, Greg Pengel's here for Action Radio. Back tomorrow at 6 in the morning Central, 7 in the morning Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And do something for your freedom today.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.